This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
We call it the place to be.
Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be too.
Place to Be Nation. Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Pumped out, luckily deaded. Guess who just smuck who's credited with editing it? Your man Mo taught a cop out. Ain't have no other career choice. He dropped out. Since when the way out's included Zorak. Way back he used to rub a store.
Place to Be Nation, how the fuck are you? This is Justin Rosero coming to you live here on this Wednesday evening. Been a long time, as some fools may say. And of course it's been quite a while since I've talked to my PIC on these airwaves. That is Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good to have you back on Terra Firma, as you've been jet-setting around the United States
too much.
And beyond in the fine metropolis of Dover, Delaware, wherever the fuck you are.
Awful.
Welcome, my friend, and welcome everyone to episode 467 of the longest-running episodic motherfucking gold standard. We got a great show tonight, but it's good to be back, JR. Again, you've been jet-setting all over the world. And
yeah, but too many planes since like September, so I'm good. Hopefully I'm done for a while. Way too
Delta'd out, American'd out, JetBlue'd out.
All of them out. And of course, the World Series Game 2 is on. Scott Criscola said he wasn't going to be watching, but he is. So already one lie in the bank there. The man who's got many lies in the bank is our, of course, third man in the booth, the Dandy Davis to our Heart Foundation. Of course, that is the one and only Canadian Kelly Nelson. Kelly, how are you?
Jeez. I can't even be the Bret Hart in the Hart Foundation. Right?
You look better in the skin-tight, striped outfit, so.
Scott's clearly the anvil, so.
That's true. Okay.
Not now. Thank God. better shape than he is now, but. Kel, it's good to have you on.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be alive if you weren't, so.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yes, that's true. I didn't say I was gonna boycott, but I cared more if you were. I was defending, you know what cracks me up? I was actually defending your team.
Yeah, but you were like, oh, it's, you literally, the words you said in that chat were, I am not going to watch. That was your, like, final statement. And now, I know you watched last night because you were commenting on it, and I let it slide, and here you are again watching game two.
I know, it's on now. What am I gonna do? I had to, you know, I got our executive producer here, and I'm gonna
throw him in the other room.
We'll put on Mid-South. But
they can wash the dishes.
I have nothing against the Astros, but you guys would have brought a better series, better uniform. It would have been two of the most classic baseball uniforms
you
ever.
You and Jeff Machado are the only ones who would care about that.
And that's right. It would have been the first World Series since 2009, another World Series you know well, where both teams don't have alternates. They only wear whites and they only wear grays. So
amazing fact. You only get here on the Place to Be podcast.
Yes.
More importantly in sports tonight, the Providence Friars, Kelly, your Providence Friars, beating up on the UConn Huskies in this charity game, which is a lot of fun. Anytime UConn gets stomped is fun, especially when PC's doing it. So.
That is true. Anyway.
Rainbow Hegan, the home of the Connecticut Sun.
Mohegan Sun Arena. It's Billy Joel banner hanging there and everything. Kel, it's good to have you.
You sure they didn't take it down after your performance at that dinner the other night?
Oh, the performance at the dinner was epic, and he was very proud of me. And he's very upset that you made him look like. What did you make him look like, Gollum?
I didn't make that picture. That was from Twitter. But by the way, you made it like I was. You did worse service to Billy Joel than I ever did with that performance the other night.
Oh, stop! It was fucking fantastic. Yeah. There's actually a better Journey performance that you have hidden in the Rosero digital archives from your wife's birthday.
Purged.
I don't think we've ever seen. It was actually pretty good.
Purged.
Anyway, it was tremendous. You wish.
Just like my lunch after I watched that video.
Yes. Well, it's been, what, 5 years now? So.
No, but congratulations on your big 10-year anniversary. So I'm glad you celebrated with your gala. Glad it went well.
Yes. No, it was very good. Very good. Thank you. But we got a big celebration tonight as we are back in the home office. Kel, you're on Terra Firma. Pete didn't touch anything. Who else has joined us? Nobody touched anything on your desk. Everything's good. Mr. Capel didn't touch anything. Is your Lanny McDonald bobblehead okay? The head didn't get popped off or anything? So everything
Hopefully
on your
not.
Desk is fine? All right, good.
Let's do it.
All right, we're back in the house. We are back in our haunt. So let us go back to February 23rd, 1987, which is a Monday night from, of course, venerable Madison Square Garden in New York City. Our final garden stop before the big show next month. We all know what big show I am speaking of. The roster, once again, and fortunately, we, unlike January where we got stuck with the crap in the nice building, Vince split the roster up into three again. One group was in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Do you know what the venue is there, JR? Do you have any clue? Is there any
building
in Pittsfield?
I have heard of Pittsfield. One of my college girlfriend's roommates was from Pittsfield, Massachusetts. So I've actually heard of the town. I think it's pretty far up, like, west. It's, like, right. It's pretty far out there in Mass. Yeah. I think it's even past, like, Springfield and stuff.
Oh, wow. Anyway, Billy Jack Haynes defeated Hercules via DQ.
Oh, I thought you knew what the arena was. I thought you were going to tell us.
Oh, I have no idea. I actually legitimately have no clue. It probably is there a college in Pittsfield? Maybe it's the high school.
Pittsfield State. It's literally almost like the border of New York. Like, that's how west it is.
Vince Scully looks really good. He's, what, 84, I think?
Your
85?
Fucking age range. Perfect. Glad that's good for you.
So, are you even insulting Vince Scully?
No, he's okay. It's right there next to New York, pretty much.
Wow.
Pretty out there. So they were actually running a show in fucking Pittsfield.
Yeah, it was only 1,200. Again, Billy Jack.
I think the whole fucking town was probably
the whole town of Pittsfield was fucking there. Yeah. Billy Jack Haynes defeated Hercules via DQ, and Hercules then won a battle royal. Oh, a harbinger of things to come. Won a battle royal on that night as well.
Apparently, it's the largest city and county seat of Berkshire County, Massachusetts.
Maybe Mr. Walters knows where Pittsfield is.
44,000-ish as of 2010. Hmm. One of the most secure places to live, 20th in the country.
Well, there's not enough people to rob, so...
Right, that's it. They've all been robbed. They're all done.
Yeah, they've already been built for this. Nobody left.
They ran out of people to rob, yep.
Maybe Mr. Walters...
I'm trying to find the arena here, or what... some notable people come from Pittsfield. Let's see. Elizabeth Banks is from Pittsfield.
Oh,
of course, timely for her turn on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
That's right. Yeah. Larry's girl that episode.
I don't really recognize many other people here. Nancy Graves, sculptor and painter. Okay. Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. Herman Melville resided in Pittsfield. Not from there, apparently.
So maybe Larry's with her in Pittsfield because there wasn't enough people there.
This is how sad this list is. Robin Williams maintained a summer home in Pittsfield. Out of people from Pittsfield.
Summer home in Pittsfield.
Oh, God.
1,201 because Larry's hiding there. That's why.
Right.
From the fatwa.
I don't know. I don't know. The Wikipedia page for Pittsfield does not have a stadium.
It's pretty sad. Yeah. Anyway, it was 1,200 in the building.
The Pittsfield Mets played there, Scott.
What's that?
The Pittsfield Mets played there from 89 to 01.
Oh, was that Pittsfield? I always thought it was Pittsfield.
New York Penn League. They were part of that. Then the Astros went there. Wankanaw Park, the home stadium of the Pittsfield Dukes, a summer collegiate baseball franchise owned by Dan Duquette. There you go.
Oh, great. I guess they didn't do the show there because it would have probably been like fucking 20 degrees.
This whole thing is like they're just trying to like make shit. Like Ulysses Frank Grant, born 1865, African American baseball player.
What's that, his fucking cousin?
Right. Yeah, they try and trick you into thinking it's that Ulysses Grant. They bury it in there at the bottom. Oh, boy.
Anyway,
looks like there's some history of baseball there. Historian John Thorne discovered a reference in 1791 prohibiting anyone from playing baseball within 80 yards of the new meeting house in Pittsfield. So there you go.
Goddamn meeting
earliest
house.
Known reference to the game in America. Okay, I'll stop.
Maybe the show was in the meeting house.
It sounds like somewhere Dan McGinn has definitely been Pittsfield.
Oh, there's no doubt. I'm sure there's some
about on Facebook, yeah.
Crap show or
something he's been to.
Afghan yard sale. Anyway, 1,200 were there. Again, Billy Jack beat Herc by DQ, and then Herc won a battle royal. The other third of the roster was at the Steve Willie country. We go from Dan McGinn country to Steve Willie country. The Dane County Coliseum in Madison, Wisconsin, is where the other third of the roster was, included a 20-man bunkhouse battle royal, which included Paul Orndorff, Blackjack Mulligan, Hillbilly Jim, Magnificent Morocco, Cowboy Bob Orton, a guy from Mid-South that I'm sure we'll get to eventually. Rick Martel, Tom Zenk, of course, the Can-Am Connection. Dino Bravo, the Rougeaus, Lanny Poffo, so we don't get to see that sexy hair tonight. Sika, Johnny V, which is, he's mentioned tonight. We'll explain why. C.V. Offie, oh, damn it. Iron Mike Sharp, Moondog Spot, Scott McGee, Terry Gibbs, and the Assassin. Should we call the Kelly Nelson Bunkhouse Battle Royal?
Yes.
Yes, the Kelly Nelson Invitational.
That's like his wedding list right there. That's all the fucking people in there.
Yeah. And six other, it says also included six other matches, which probably was all of those guys. So, so anyway, that's where the other third of the roster was. And of course, we get a pretty good hunk. No sniff of Hogan. Of course, he's not with us tonight, and he's not probably not at either of these. I bet you he shut
the
down.
Valentine's Day thing with Linda or something.
Maybe. Or he was shut down between now and the big show. Why? We'll explain momentarily. JR, any notes we have before we get started?
Yeah, a few things have gone down since we last chatted.
Yes,
about on
yes,
the
quite a few things.
January 19th, 87, MSG. On 124 Superstars during Piper's Pit, Jack Tunney presented Andre the Giant with a trophy for being the only undefeated man in WWF history. The trophy was smaller than the one Hulk Hogan had received for being champion for 3 years, a very long time. Hogan came out and took over the interview, at which point Andre walked off. On 131, Jesse Ventura told Roddy Piper he can produce Andre the Giant if Piper could produce Hogan for a face-to-face a week later. And that did occur on February 7th, where Andre the Giant officially turned heel on his friend Hulk Hogan. Andre came out with new manager Bobby Heenan. Heenan accused Hogan of being Andre's friend, only so he wouldn't have to defend the title against him. Andre proceeded to tell Hogan he wants a championship match at WrestleMania, and then rips off his t-shirt and crucifix, scratching up Hogan's chest in the process and causing him to bleed. On 214, Hogan accepted Andre the Giant's challenge, and then a couple other things happened too. President Jack Tunney suspended referee Danny Davis for life. We'll talk more about that as we move along. And the first appearance is Barry Darso as Smash in a brand new team called Demolition, who we'll talk about later as well. All right, a lot going on here to digest, and all the Andre Hogan stuff, of course, had been kind of hinted at when Andre's suspension was lifted and mysteriously Bobby Heenan was involved in the discussions. And then of course we saw back at the last MSG show, Andre came out and kind of, you know, handed the belt to Hogan but held on a little bit tighter and kind of gave him a stare. So obviously stuff was percolating between these guys and it boiled over here week to week on Superstars. Kelly, you want to share any thoughts on this? Might as well talk about it now and then we can get into the show.
Yeah, well, that was a huge show, the one where Andre turned on Hogan. I guess it was the same show where the Bulldogs lost to the Hearts. Or it was all from the same taping.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if it aired the same day. I remember being so enthusiastic for that tag match, like, because it had been announced a week before or whatever, and I was, you know, a huge Bulldogs fan, and I was really looking forward to that. And, yeah, a bit of a letdown, of course, with what happened. Yeah, this was just, for me, this was when I was, you know, my first big peak as a wrestling fan and all this stuff. It seemed like every week something exciting happened, something, you know, really cool happened. It's a really, really great time, real high point for WWF.
Have you got any thoughts on the overall kind of direction of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it was the biggest feud ever, or biggest match ever, for sure.
Yeah, we'll get more as we move along, obviously. A lot to digest, and we'll actually spend a heavy amount of time before the big show getting into this feud, as well as one other feud, which we'll talk about later on in the show, because that is part of our show this evening. Anything else,
nope,
Chair?
That's it.
Let's do it. All right, let's hop into the garden for our opener, which, speaking of gimmick changes... I totally forgot when he actually came into the ring, but who do we have on our opener?
Well, first of all, we have on commentary, I should say, Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. Mm-hmm. Much better than good old Mean Gene, who did the January show, which was unbearable. Bobby Heenan back in the booth here, so that's exciting. And that is the opener between Paul Roma and Salvatore Bellomo.
The Pizza Man!
Weird opener here is a freaking Bellomo dug back up to tussle the always up and coming Paul Roma. Roma hasn't been around much either of late, and just like Sal. Sal has a Rocky robe on and basically mimicking Rocky Balboa being dubbed the Italian style. I mean, they're not even trying to hide it. He's fucking being Rocky, basically.
It's even the same color as this stuff. Yeah.
Like, I swear he was probably just like in the Philly airport and saw it and just bought it. It was like, oh, I'm going to be Rocky now. Sal has some unique tights, too. It looks like he has underwear over his trunks.
There's no doubt.
An homage to a Scott from Asbury Park. Right. Also bulked up a bit in the midsection, too, looking a little hefty. Gorilla reveals that Andre the Giant is now hooked up with Bobby Heenan. And Bobby says Andre's getting conditioned for the WWF title match, and he invites Gorilla to come out to the gym to see. We get plenty of stalling before the lockup, and then followed by more feeling out. Lots of talk about Hogan and Andre here as we're going through the opening paces. Gorilla plugs WrestleMania in the Silver Dome, says Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant is the main event for the World Heavyweight title. Roma gets a near fall and a roll-up. Sal works the arms. We check in with the Japanese announcers in the house. Bobby says, Sal looks like an Oreo cookie with those tights on. He says was the first original Stallion in Rocky was patterned after him. Bobby and Gorilla talk about Midget Mania match at WrestleMania, and of course we'll get into that later. Roma powers up and works a headlock as Bobby talks about Bundy squashing the midgets. Sal fights free and lays an uppercut and then shocking standing dropkick for two. Sal hammers away and grabs a sleeper as Gorilla talks about his friend Soupy Sales. Roma recovers and goes back to the arm as Bobby talks about how Roma always rushes through his offense and messes things up. Sal turns the tide and kicks and stomps away as we get more WrestleMania talk. Sal gets a chin lock as Gorilla tells a Soupy picked Hogan to win, and Bobby reveals that King Harley Race will battle Junkyard Dog at WrestleMania, with the loser having to bow down. Roma gets a backdrop and fires away and pelts Sal with a dropkick that sends him outside. Sal returns, we get a sloppy transition to a Roma slam and a fist drop off the middle rope with a flying clothesline. Roma misses on a charge to the corner, but reverses a whip and lands an awkward shoulder block before missing a blind dive off the middle rope. Roma recovers with a power slam for the win. This had its moments. I thought a lot of awkward, sloppy ones, too. Roma hasn't really evolved much, and Sal's just kind of taking up space and not much here. But it's, you know, we've seen worse openers for sure. I went half a star. What did you think of this one, Scott?
I gave it a half star as well. Your opening match time, 12:23. It's a long time. it was hard to keep. It was kind of hard to focus on it because Gorilla and Bobby seemed like they couldn't give two shits about this match. And they were mostly talking about Andre and Bobby's guys and Bundy and all that. So I even felt like they were like not caring about this match either. But it didn't have a good pace. It was very choppy and, you know, and then it just ended. We're going to get some decent length matches tonight. So 12:23 is not the longest match of the night, believe me. But honestly, it just felt like a paint-by-numbers opener. Nothing really earth-shattering here. And again, I feel like Gorilla and Bobby were more talking about WrestleMania and, you know, the feuds and stuff and Bobby's guys than even these two guys. I felt like at least there were huge, at least 2 or 3 minute swaths of time where I don't think you could have closed your eyes and wouldn't even have known who the hell was wrestling because neither guy really cared. So it wasn't a dud, but if the announcers aren't going to give full attention to it, then I don't think any of us need to either. I gave it a half star as well, Kelly.
Yeah, well, that's half stars across the board for this one. But this was more interesting, at least to me, than most half-star matches.
Right, yeah.
You know, Belomo, where has he been? He actually, I think, just returned in late 86 after being gone for about a year. And now he's a heel. And I don't remember this at all. I don't think he was on TV very much at this time.
Not at the tweeter.
Yeah, and of course he's got the beard now, and he's slowly morphing into, you know, what he becomes in 1993 in ECW, or 1992 maybe even it was.
And you can read all about that in my Extreme Evolution series, each and every Monday, PlayStation.com.
There you go. There you go. There you go. So, it, like, hats off to him for, you know, changing his character. I mean, he was going nowhere. He was a jobber. He was getting booed as a babyface, so here... You know, he kind of went with it. The Rocky gimmick, I don't know. I guess we're supposed to think he's gone crazy or he's slowly going crazy. Comedy jobber now. So, yeah, there was some funny stuff at the start. And Roma also has been absent for quite a while. And from MSG, anyway. And he got met with a round of boos from the lovely MSG crowd, of course, hate the pretty boy baby faces at this time. We get boring chants when they get into the grappling spots. Yeah, this went on for too long, but it was basically a commercial for WrestleMania 3, like you mentioned, Scott, where Cena and Heenan. By the way, it's great to have Heenan here. You know, no offense to Al, but that pairing was getting a little tired. Yeah, maybe it was just too many bad cards in a row with Monsoon and Lord Al, that it's nice to get a different combination here.
I agree.
Freshen things up, makes it feel different. And, well, they're just a better pairing together, obviously. They hype Mania 3 like crazy.
Oh, yeah, big time.
which is fine. I mean, they had to. Yeah, then this match, who cares? It's in the arena, you're buying popcorn. On TV, you're getting sold WrestleMania 3. It's that's how it goes. And actually, Belomo was gone after the March 10th TV taping. I made a note of that.
Okay,
so not too much longer. Yeah, this was his last MSG match, if that matters.
I mean, the WrestleMania stuff definitely makes a ton of sense, and it finally makes the commentary good. Yeah. Not that it's not good, but I do enjoy these pre-Mania shows, or like pre-big. I mean,
yeah,
we've only really had Mania so far, but like I remember liking that in 86 as well, because you finally get some focus in the commentary, like stuff to talk about instead of just kind of rambling on. So I did enjoy that with them really hard selling Mania. I thought it was really smart that they did it. So I agree.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, this was a half-star match, but it wasn't hard to watch, really. You know,
and it was probably by design, I suppose, because you know they really wanted to sell the show hard, so might as well have a match no one gives two shits about. It's just easier because you go, there's obviously better matches that we're going to be focusing on later on, so you might as well do the throwaway opener and start doing the selling now, so you don't have to really worry that you're missing anything here. So it was probably done by design, I assume.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So there you go. Paul Roma with the win. Little tag action next up, JR. What do we got?
Brand new team, gentlemen. One that we haven't talked about yet before here on the show. I don't think so, anyway. And that is the team of Demolition, featuring Axe and Smash, managed by Luscious Johnny V, comprised of, Bill Eadie and Randy Colley. Of course, Bill Eadie, we've talked about quite a bit. He is was the Mass Superstar, and then later was Big Machine, right?
Super Machine.
One of the machines. And Randy Colley is actually one of the Moondogs, where he was Moondog Rex, right? So we've seen him pretty recently on TV as a Moondog. They worked as a team early on. They wore black studded outfits, a hockey mask covered in leather with face paint, and really looked basically like Dominatrix slash like Kiss slash, you know, like just like just these big S&M freak monsters.
And Mad Max, the Road Warrior, I think was an influence.
Yeah, so this is all the shit like put into a blender and spit out Demolition. And so they debuted on the January 17th Superstars, defeated Sal Palomo and Mario Mancini, the Italian fucking super jobber team there. After only a few matches, though, Colley was replaced by Barry Darso. We'll talk about him in a moment. Too many fans recognized Colley as Rex. So Eadie was pitched some replacements. They thought that all the ones that they were pitching would be recognized as well. So they looked outside of the company and went to Jim Crockett Promotions, where Darso was portraying Crusher Khrushchev alongside Nikita Koloff. So... and then he left Crockett following a dispute in order to take over the role of Smash. So here he comes. Kind of shit luck for Colley, right? I mean, this is a pretty big upgrade for him to go from Moondogs to this big team that's clearly going to get a push. And because fans recognize him, they switch him out. And, I mean, it seems very un-WWF like to care about that. Like, I feel like normally they just like foster on. Like, I feel like there had to be more to it than that, Kelly. Have you ever heard anything else besides that?
That's what I was going to say, is that a lot of people think that's just, you know, kind of like a fan-made rumor that it was. Like, people did recognize him as Rex. They were chanting Moondog at him and stuff like that. But really, would that be a deal-breaker? I don't think so. There was probably some behind-the-scenes stuff going on. And as a further kicker to Colley, he actually apparently came up with the Demolition gimmick. It was his idea, and so he gets bounced from it right away.
There's been some, like... issues with that, haven't there, in like recent years too, where like wasn't he, because he was pissed about it, and like was a royalty related, or was he mad that Axe and Smash are still out there at shows like doing the gimmick and stuff?
Yeah, and I think that's been in like litigation over the years too with them doing the Demolition gimmick. still to this very day, I think I just saw a picture online not too long ago of them at a recent indie show. God bless them, in full gimmick. But yeah, it's a long, complicated story. It could make for a good book or something, the history of the Demolition gimmick.
Anything on Darso you want to talk about, or do you want me to cover his, I don't know if you have any?
Not really. I mean, I didn't get to see any Crockett at this time. It wasn't on TV in Calgary, so I didn't know Crusher Khrushchev. I mean, I knew him from the magazines, but that was about it.
Made his debut in Hawaii as Zarmongo. Yeah, baby! That's where it all started. worked in New Zealand a bit, back to Hawaii, bounced around, went to Georgia, to Mid-South, where he became Crusher Darso, a turncoat American, Soviet sympathizer with Nikolai Volkov, changed his name to Crusher Khrushchev, won the Mid-South television title in a tournament, beating Terry Taylor, stuck around there for a while, then moved to the NWA, worked with Crockett, starting in December of 84, was one-third of the six-man tag team champions with Ivan and Nikita, when he had a fallout with former partner Don Kernodle. And the Koloffs had already won the tag team titles, and Ivan declared any two of them could defend those belts. Khrushchev hung around, won the Mid-Atlantic heavyweight title, defeated Sam Houston. It was a vacated title at Starrcade 85. Bounced around again a little bit more and hung around there until he jumps over in 87. So big upgrade for him, obviously getting put into the spot. And again, sucks for Colley. And good use of Axe, you know, Bill Eadie. We've talked about how good he was in as Mass Superstar, how good he was in the Machines. And it's good that they found something for him to do without, you know, having to force him out of here. So,
yeah. Good stuff. He had a lot left to give. I mean, he was a great in-ring guy psychology-wise and a great worker. So, yeah, he was the anchor for the team for sure.
See if that continues. As they take on the Islanders in their MSG debut, the tag team division continues to be shaken up and reloaded. And you wonder with Johnny V taking on them. You know, Dream Team hasn't officially ended yet, but you wonder what their future holds now that Johnny V has a new team in his auspices. Islanders jog out to warm welcome, in for an interesting challenge. Demolition decked out in their black studded leather, entering to a heavy metal riff. Gorilla can't believe Johnny V is in here for such a big debut of his team. They have a tremendous look here. They immediately stand out, like very different from anything else in the company at this point. Gorilla and Bobby note all the big tag matches at WrestleMania that'll be going down, including the debut of Danny Davis. We get some stalling as Demolition delay taking off their masks before eventually removing them. Bobby talks about all the Islanders and Samoans being the same, calling them sandflies. Smash and Tama open up with a stalemate and a shoulder block before Smash puts them down with a second one. Haku tags in and they double team to wipe out both Axe and Smash, sending them outside to regroup. Gorilla likes the aggression given the size difference. We reset with Haku and Axe as they trade blows until Haku takes over and rattles Axe with a headbutt before grabbing hold of the arm. Tama tags in and keeps working the arm as Bobby keeps making racist jokes. Haku comes back in, turns his focus to the leg. Gorilla takes a couple of shots at Andre, leading to Bobby crapping on Hogan. The Islanders keep tagging in and out and double-teaming a bit while working the legs as Gorilla says he's going to call Andre. But Bobby says the numbers changed and he does all the talking now. Bobby says Andre and Gorilla's friendship is over. And this is, like, really good because Gorilla, he can't accept the fact that he's no longer friends with Andre. And he wants to know what Bobby did to him. So they're really pushing that, like, Bobby got in Andre's head and turned him. And, like, Gorilla, you know, talks about how good friends they were, how they talk every week. And now he's like, what do you mean I'm not going to be able to talk to him anymore? Like, you can hear Gorilla, like, kind of hurting as this goes further on. Tama comes in but ends up outside where he gets whipped hard into the guardrail. Axe and Smash take turns nailing Tama with hard strikes, eventually knocking him outside again. Tama has a cut on his back as things break down outside between Smash and Haku. Axe batters Tama inside, grabbing a near fall and continuing the quick tag power offense. Smash drops Tama with a hot shot and grabs a bear hug. Tama escapes and lands a blow to knock Smash down before making the hot tag. Haku comes in on fire, runs right through Smash before dropping him with a sidekick. Tama tags in and we get a double headbutt. Tama goes up top, and Bobby calls him a spider monkey just as the camera cuts to a black fan in the crowd. Real tough timing there. He says it right as, like, they show that. So if you weren't really paying attention, you would think that's what he was saying. Tama dives off the top. Not that it was good either way, but Tama dives off the top with a great crossbody, but Axe makes a save. All four men brawl until Smash catches Tama with a backbreaker and holds him there so Axe can land an elbow off the middle rope for the win. Fun match, good pacing, blend of quick action and power offense. Demolition really kept stride with the Islanders, who seem to be slipping back down the ladder a bit after the push. Good first showing for Demolition. I went 2 stars on this. And Kelly, give me your thoughts on the match, but also, like, what are your thoughts on the Islanders being used in a spot like this? When normally I feel like they'd use more of a job-level tag team to put over Demolition in their debut, do you feel like the Islanders are getting to that point already?
Kind of, because I remember they won the Tag Team Battle Royal.
Right.
I believe it was October, and then the next month they lost to the Dream Team, I believe, right? And the Dream Team is going down, and seemingly the Islanders were going up, and that booking decision didn't seem to make sense. So, yeah, it seemed like Vince or whomever became bored with the Islanders quite quickly as babyfaces. But, I mean, they're really good babyfaces, so it was a really good idea to have them in a match with a debuting heel team like Demolition, I think, because this match got over with the crowd. They were into it. Demolition gets the win, looks good. And, yeah, this was a good match. To give a shout-out to my old Tag Teams Back Again podcast, this is the first of 3 matches from this card that we actually reviewed on that show. So shows that this card's got a little bit of depth to it, or more depth than your usual MSG show. Demolition's early instrumental version of their famous theme before Rick Derringer provided the lyrics to it. I totally forgot that they had a just an instrumental version of it before the lyrics.
Yeah, it's pretty much the song, right? I mean, it sounded like
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it was just the dun 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 dun.
I don't even think it's the original.
I think
this was like a kind of a rougher version.
Okay. Yeah, probably. I'm sure they refined it when Derringer laid the track down. They probably
This is definitely not the original. Yeah, definitely not the original.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same basic.
It's the same song. It's just a little rougher. Yeah.
Yeah. Hot Start by the Islanders. Good Shine. Then the demos took over. Tama took some really good bumps. That was one of his, you know, main calling cards here. As a babyface, he's awesome. And the face paint on the demos, I made a note, looks more like Kiss than what they're basically best remembered for. It would evolve. This was more the early, of course, this was the early attempt at it, and it looks totally like Kiss makeup, I thought. Good House of Fire by Haku when he comes in. Thomas Cross Body was nice, and then, yeah, we kind of got a quick ending with the Demolition Decapitation, so they already have that in their arsenal. I went 2.5 stars. I thought this was a really solid tag bout between two teams that I really like, actually. So, yeah, good match.
Your match time, 9:13. I gave this 2.5, actually. I liked it. I thought it was hard-hitting. I like the back and forth. Funny that Johnny, I don't even remember Johnny V managing them, to be honest with you. And it's weird.
He's with
that
them
they
for
had
a while,
him.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I think so.
A couple months, maybe right after WrestleMania 3, they go to Fuji. It wasn't too long, but definitely, yeah, the first couple months.
Yeah, and yet he's in Wisconsin, so that's kind of weird. I just think it's a good match. It's stiff. Maybe that's why JR. I think maybe they wanted a team like the Islanders who could kind of take the I don't say potatoes, but can kind of work a little snug. Unless they really wanted to just pummel jobbers, but they might have just wanted to get a good match out of them. And I think obviously there were different things on the horizon for the Islanders, so maybe this was a turn. You know, this was a part of that plan. But I enjoyed it. I think you're going to see more out of Demolition. I think the change in terms of personnel will be better for them too. And the crowd, even though they were booing them, obviously, still seemed intrigued by them. So it doesn't surprise me what happens down the line, but the crowd definitely was kind of intrigued by this new kind of different looking team.
You think they are end up being as big as they are if they didn't make the switch to Darso, or do you think it would have been a wash?
Eventually, Darso's character comes out. His promos are better. I don't think Cully could have pulled it off like Darso did. So, no, I don't think they would have been as successful.
What do you think, Cully?
The Moondogs were a pretty good tag team at their peak. Rex was solid. He was also one of the assassins at one point. So he was in quite a few notable tag teams over mm-hmm. there. Who's to say? I think, you know, Darso was younger. I think that was kind of a key to the team, is that it was kind of an old man, young guy team, whereas Edie and Collie were about the same age. So maybe that the Darso addition added a more interesting dynamic. I don't know.
You wonder if they would have lasted as long, or if like Collie would have broken a bar. I don't know how long Collie ends up wrestling, you know what I mean? But
yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think it was probably for the best.
And Fuji, according to Graham, Fuji was announced as the manager on the 411 Superstars. So that's when he takes over. They said Johnny V sold the contracts to Fuji. When's Johnny V done? Is it? I got to think he was probably almost done, right? For them, unless they just thought Fuji was a better fit.
The new Dream Team goes until the end of 1987.
Okay, so he's around for a while.
With Valiant, and then he just vanishes right at the beginning of 1988, basically, I think.
Right here, Graham has Survivor Series. This is his last appearance with the new Dream Team.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Okay. Mm. Okay.
All right, there you have it. Demolition is on the scene. Up next, we have the Birdman, Coco Beware, taking on Sika, former Wild Samoan. Gorilla calls Coco an unreal fire plug that creates excitement. Bobby wonders if he'll have his dirty pigeon with him. Sika stalks to the ring and meanders around until Coco dances out, fires up the crowd, and as we had in our little chat room today, it was to The Bird by Morris Day and the Time, of course, was the song Coco used at this point. Gorilla and Bobby talk about Bob Uecker being at WrestleMania. Sheik is calling out for the Wizard to come down to the ring, and he never shows up. Gorilla also talks about grilling Tunney on Andre Herring, but congratulates him on suspending Danny Davis. Coco's a bit weary, but he uses his speed to dodge Sheik early. Sheik takes over and scrapes and kicks away at Coco as we get talk about Roddy Piper's retirement haircut match with Adrian Adonis at WrestleMania. Sheik cuts Coco down with a chop, and Bobby says he wouldn't be surprised if Sheik goes outside and nibbles on the pigeon. Sheik shoots Coco hard to the floor, but Coco comes back and catches him with a dropkick from behind and rolls him up for the win. Sheik beats up Coco after the bell, but the Birdman gets the win. Nothing match here at all, really, just kind of going through the motions until the end. Coco's bump to the floor was pretty nasty, though. That was the highlight of the match to me. I went a half star just for that bump and for Coco getting the win. What did you think of this one, Scott?
I also gave this a half star. Quick sprint there. Your match time was 4:51. Now, here's an interesting thing. This must be, Graham must have a typo then, because he says Sheik is in Wisconsin. So Afa must be in Wisconsin.
Well, I don't think Afa was wrestling anymore.
Yeah, I don't think Afa.
So then either.
Well, it could have been a matinee night. I mean, he could have.
He might have flown.
He could have came there.
Did you really need Sheik that bad? To hop on a plane to go from Wisconsin to New York.
Yeah. Anyway, or, I mean, this could have been a match. Do we know if this is at night for sure? Well, I guess
yeah,
it's
it was
because
you could see the clock.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Because maybe they needed him there. I mean, it could have been a situation where they needed him. Like, they were short, they couldn't get someone, and he had to, maybe they had to fly him down to fill in or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
does
weird.
Graham have him on both?
What's that?
Graham has him listed for both.
Yeah, there it's... Graham has, let's see, Coco Beware, Pinsica at 4:51, yep, and then Madison, Wisconsin, 20-man Bunkhouse, Bob, Courtney Orndorff, Mulligan, Hillbilly Jim, Morocco, Orton, Martel, Zink, Bravo, Ramon, Lenny Poffo, Sheik.
Yeah, I mean, that could be someone just misremembering when they sent the card into him or something, I'm guessing. Yeah. I mean, MSG, we know he's there, right? So I'm guessing that Wisconsin card probably, when it got reported to him, just was wrong, that's all.
Must have been type, yeah, exactly.
Go rattle that Graham cage, see what's going on.
Yes. Anyway, fun little sprint. Coco does take a pretty hard bounce, which was pretty cool. Again, another match where, they were sort of paying attention, but it was also mostly about the WrestleMania card, where it seems like the matches are, the big matches are mostly set. I'm sure there's some more to come, but more of them, I mean, obviously the three big ones, which we'll talk about, well, one we already know about, the main event, and then three other big ones we'll mention later on in the show because it all involves our main event. So a lot of stuff going on, and WrestleMania 3 being hard sold again while this little match goes on, which nobody really cares about. So Coco gets the win, 4:51, and Sheik takes the fall, even if his doppelganger is a couple thousand miles away. Finally, JR, in our next match.
Well, hang on, Kelly, did you talk about that one?
No, oh, I'm sorry, Kel. I didn't think you did.
You take a couple weeks off, you get forgotten. That's how it goes.
I know, King.
Well, you didn't invite Sheik to your wedding anyway, so he doesn't give a shit. So. sorry, Kel, go ahead.
That's okay. Another round of half stars, because I agree. Firstly, though, the dub job of Coco's music, that just angered me for some reason. Well, most of the dub jobs do.
And it's so blatant because it's like volume 4 to like volume 11. Fink was added too. Fink had to must have revoiced it too.
Yeah, like 20 years later, Finkel doing a commentary. Yeah, to align up with what was going on. Yeah, I wish they could just have the original stuff, pay the royalties or whatever. Just the dub jobs just drive me crazy. This match is kind of weird because Coco wins, but he wins really cheaply, totally by fluke. And then Sheik immediately beats him up afterwards. It's one of those matches where the guy who wins gets less over than the guy who loses. And Coco needed some help, especially against a big guy like Sheik. Yeah, I didn't really like how they had to. Why were they protecting Sheik so much, really? What was he going to do for the rest of the year? Not much. And Coco was popular and should have been put over more strongly or with more confidence, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunate for Coco.
I think this is the best win that Coco can possibly get, you know what I mean?
I think so.
Like, that is not going to
banana peel slip.
Right. Then he's never going to really get like a big win, especially for a guy better than him like that. Yeah. All right. Now's that next match, Scott, where we do have another MSG debut of Butch Reed taking on good old Chico Santana. Tito, of course, comes out here. And Butch Reed, first time we're seeing him on one of these shows, trained to wrestle by Ronnie Etchinson in 1978. Early on, wrestled as Bruce Reed, adopting that Hacksaw nickname. Reed and Jerry Roberts beat Mike George and Bob Sweeten for the Central States Tag Team Championships. Worked in Central States for a while there, and then headed to Mid-South, where this is kind of really where he built up his name and resume. Was there for 3 years, almost. Known as Hacksaw Butch Reed, came into the territory as a tag team partner for the main face, Junkyard Dog. Came to face-to-face over Hacksaw Jim Duggan, over the Hacksaw nickname. And then they had some wars over that, hung around, won the North American title, and really did a lot there. Went to the AWA for a cup of coffee, went to back to Central States, where he'd hook up with Slick, and that, of course, is the manager that brings him here. After they both lost a Loser Leaves Town match to Bruiser Brody, they left Central States, head to the WWF, brought in as a package. We've seen Slick for a bit, though, so did they not debut Reed right away, do you know, Kelly, or just has he just kind of been buried on the house show circuit?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but no, Slick preceded him by a good few months.
Yeah,
for sure.
I wonder if Reed was just kind of
maybe taking a break.
Well, we saw him on a lot of house shows, remember, and we kept like ducking.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he's working. January 1st, he was working. Let's see, in '86 when he first showed up.
He was definitely working in '86. He was definitely working in '86.
Because I knew him and Slick definitely came in as a package. Yeah, September 16th, Butch Reed with Slick, his debut.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, around
and that was on TV. That was Superstars. So yeah, so he's been around, but he hasn't been an MSG. So there you go. Butch Reed is here taking on Tito, jogs to the ring along with Slick. Tito comes out, gets a nice pop as usual. Gorilla calls Slick a snake, says he deserved to get slammed by Tito a few weeks back. We get some feeling out and stalling as Gorilla notes that Butch Reed will take on Coco Beware at WrestleMania. Tito dodges a right hand and unloads with his own, knocking the natural outside. Reed comes back in, but Tito overwhelms him and knocks him back out there a second time. The crowd chants on Tito as he tries to drag Reed back in, but Butch lands a jab and chokes him away over the middle rope. Slick laughs it up, but Tito comes back with a kick to the face and a front face lock. Slick pops into a table, to the announce table, and says the ref is allowing Tito to cheat, just as Reed lands a shot to the throat. Reed kicks away and slingshots Tito up into the bottom rope, cranks on a tight chin lock, but Tito busts free, lands a shoulder block. Reed catches him with a knee to the gut to cut him down, and then spikes him hard to the mat. Reed goes to the middle rope, but Tito lands a punch to the gut on the way down and starts to go to work. Reed tries to beg off, but Tito's all over him with punches, grabbing near falls. Reed whacks Tito with a clothesline, but Tito blocks an atomic drop and locks in the figure four. Reed forces the rope break and chokes and punches away at Tito. Slick comes in the ring and tries to whack Tito with the cane, but Coco comes out and makes a save. And the ref calls for the bell as Tito and Coco clean house to a big pop. Solid match here. Both guys look pretty good after the slow start. I thought the finish made sense. Tito's been in a bit of a free fall. You kind of didn't want him to lose. And you can't have Reed lose first MSG match when he's going to be getting kind of a push. It also gives Coco some more shine. He's got an issue with Butch Reed coming at Mania. So everything kind of made sense here. This is a feud that could continue and be pretty entertaining, honestly, too. I went 2.5 on this, Kelly.
Yeah, so did I. Yep, good match, as you'd expect, with Tito and Butch Reed at this time. Was still pretty good. I mean, because his reputation in Mid-South is that he was a really good worker. I haven't, seen a ton of his work in Mid-South, but what I have seen really impressed me. So he was, still a pretty good, had a pretty good game at this time. And yeah, Santana looked really good with his shine early, and his hope spots throughout were great. I just love Tito, so any chance to talk about him is great for me. His selling was great in this match. And then when he gets the figure four on, the crowd pops huge for it. So that they're still well into Tito and at MSG. And just as you thought it was going to really get cooking, Coco stepped in. And we get, the storytelling stuff and the setup for Mania. So it makes sense. But it's too bad because this one could have went into 3, 3.5. Who knows how high it could have went if it went to a bit longer decision. Mm-hmm. And I know they have another match or maybe multiple other matches that are on tape that are considered really good and better than this one out there, so that's something to check out. But yeah, good match, but the finish kind of halted the momentum to it.
I believe I also gave this 2.5. I enjoyed it. It was a good. It was a good match. Your match time is 12:10, so a little less than our opener. I feel like Tito has finally realized what his future holds, and that's going to be in kind of these matches here and there, where he, you know, kind of fills out roster spots. Notice his lush mullet is filling in nicely now. It's not, it's not as short a hair as he had like in 85. The mullet is coming in nicely. Butch took some solid bumps. He hit the deck pretty hard a few times through the ropes. So he definitely worked. Like you said, Kellen, I saw I saw a few of his matches on the network on some Mid-South episodes in like 83. And he definitely was not bad. I mean, I felt bad for him in the sense that they were trying to replace him as kind of like the precursor of the Junkyard, you know, is the not precursor, the
yeah,
the future replacement for the Junkyard Dog, kind of to keep the African American crowd down there, you know, into a hero of theirs, and it didn't work. He was good, but he wasn't JYD. JYD had that, you know, charisma.
Yeah, but he found his place as a heel in Mid-South, though.
Yes, so. He did, very much so.
It did work out for him in the
end. It did work out for him, yes. Yeah. But a good match, though, not bad. I mean, it's Tito, so he's not going to give you a piece of junk. And Butch is actually pretty good. Like I said, I mean, he's a good power guy who can kind of go with the flow. He bumps well, which is tough to get with guys like him who are big jacked up dudes. But he took some good bumps. Sold for Tito. Wasn't crazy about the double DQ, but I guess both guys should deserve to be protected. So I'm okay with the logic. Sadly, I think, took away from the match a little bit. I maybe would have given it 3 stars, maybe. But 2.5 is, I think, is pretty good, considering what some people on the surface would think of Butch Reed. But I thought he was really good, and I thought it was a great match. And I think he's a good addition to the company. I think they needed kind of a big, kind of cool heel to be with Slick. I thought it was a good acquisition for Vince. Little do we know what would happen. But I thought it was a fine match, good match in the middle, kind of a good spell for the crowd before our kind of co-main event or mid-show main event we got next. So I enjoyed it. 2.5 stars for me. And we have a double DQ in 12:10. And now, JR, our sole title match of the evening.
It is our sole title match, and that is with brand new tag team champions, the Hart Foundation, taking on the ever feisty Killer Bees. The Hart Foundation won the tag team titles from the British Bulldogs on the 2787 Superstars in just under 3 minutes, following a double DDT and heart attack on Davey Boy Smith. Smith wrestled the match by himself when Dynamite was knocked out before the bout began with Jimmy Hart's megaphone. Danny Davis was referee for the bout and kept checking on Dynamite as the Hearts double-teamed Smith illegally. Of course, there's a couple things going to play here. Dynamite still really, really injured. His back all jacked up. You know, or is it his knee or his back? I think it's his back at this point, right? He hurt it.
Back. His back.
Yeah, late 86. So he's been spotty anyway through the back end of this reign. And as a result, he doesn't even wrestle in this match. And they had to get the belts off the Bulldogs. We talked about this in past episodes. But the Hart Foundation get an assist from Danny Davis, pushing his angle and heat along. Kelly, you kind of referenced it a bit earlier, but what did you think of the ending? Like, did the Bulldogs reign to you in retrospect now end up being like a pretty big disappointment?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, for me, it was one of the things, the Bulldogs being champs was one of the things that got me hooked on wrestling. So yeah, it was successful in that, you know, they were really, really cool and then got people interested, but it sputtered out for sure. But I mean, when your back goes out like Dynamite, there was nothing they could do. It's unfortunate. Who knows how long they would plan to have them hold the titles, because they weren't really building anybody up super strong to, because usually you can see these things coming a mile away, but
right.
They didn't really have a super strong team, and the Hearts kind of were just thrown into that.
And we were talking about that recently, just how it seemed like they had kind of not had much of a direction of late. As recently as the end of 86, we were like, what are they doing with these guys? Just kind of there.
It's interesting because they were building up the Davey or the Danny Davis thing well before Dynamite got hurt. So I'm wondering, you know, what the end game for that would have been. Like, when were they going to pull the trigger on Davis going full heel and getting suspended?
You wonder if it was going to be WrestleMania.
Yeah, maybe. Like, it was obviously going to happen at some point, but probably, obviously, it wasn't going to be during a Hearts Bulldogs title switch, I guess. So
right.
That's interesting, too.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess maybe they wanted to have... I mean, you could argue at this point Davis wrestling is, like, the bigger draw. So maybe they wanted to... Yeah. Maybe the goal along was to have him wrestle at WrestleMania anyway, so...
Yeah, but it worked. The timing was actually great because it, right. it was great that Davis screwed the Bulldogs out of the titles to totally cement his heel turn. That was the perfect thing to do.
All right. So they are taking on the Killer Bees. Big tag title match here as the new champs strut out with Jimmy Hart and New Hart Foundation member Danny Davis. The Bees are primed for a big spot, deserving of the shot. Gorilla questions Danny's wrestling cred, and Bobby says Jimmy saw something in him. Blair and Anvil start off as Jimmy comes over and gloats about Davis. Both men tag without ever touching. And we finally get some action as Brunzell dodges the hitman attack and starts to work the arm. Bobby mocks the Bees' tennis shoes as Blair tags in and starts to lay in some headbutts to the gut. Blair slingshots Brett into Anvil, leading to the Hearts regrouping with Jimmy and Danny outside. Back in, the Bees continue to tag off and work the arm of Brett as Gorilla puts over Brunzell's dropkick. Hart catches Blair with a headbutt and shoves him into the corner where the champs get to work with double teaming and choking, punishing Blair in the corner. The champs start nabbing near falls with Blair getting a couple of hope spots, including a roll-up near fall. Hart cranks on a front face lock, and then the champs bait Brunzell in so they can double-team choke some more. Gorilla reminds us that Davis is suspended for life, but Bobby says Jimmy Hart may appeal. Anvil comes in and slams Blair down hard and slingshots Brett in with a splash for two. Blair reverses a whip and then shoots Hart into the corner and gets another two count. Hart regains control with another front face lock, and then Anvil tags in and gets a near fall after Hart kneed Blair in the back. Anvil hooks in a bear hug as the crowd rallies Brian, who elbows free of the hold but gets trapped right back into the front face lock. Brunzell finally gets a tag, but the ref misses it, and the beating continues, eventually capped with a Bret Hart seated chin lock. Blair breaks free and finally makes a tag to Brunzell, who comes in on fire, mowing through the champs with a crisp attack, including a dropkick for a near fall, where the bell sounds inadvertently. As Brunzell scoops Hart up for a slam, Davis comes in and clobbers him from behind, causing Brett to fall on top for the win. Davis fucked up with the timing there. He comes in too early and kind of stands around and leaves and comes back in again. Fun tag match, though. A lot of great work on both ends with the selling, the heat, and the shine. Brunzell's dropkick is great. Good effort here to continue to push Danny Davis's heat, too. He's clearly the focal point a bit, especially with the finish. And the Hearts title reign's off to a nice start as they fend off the Feisty Bees, who had a nice showing. I went 3 stars in this, Scott.
I actually went 3.5. I thought this match was fantastic. I loved it. I liked it a lot. Your runtime, 13:52, so a nice meaty match for two teams that can handle it. I feel like, first of all, we knew that this match was going to be great because they've wrestled in the past here at the Garden and elsewhere and have not disappointed. I don't know why the Bees changed into the stupid sneakers. I didn't get that. They look like idiots, but... curious your thoughts, Cal, too. I feel like the Hearts are actually a little more vicious now, a little more aggressive in the ring, and really put the heel feeling into things more than when they were just kind of, as you said, JR, kind of floating around through most of 86. I feel like they're taking advantage of being the top dogs in the division now and kind of showing a little extra. Like, there's that one moment where I think it's Brunzell is like lying on the apron and Anvil's just like fucking pounding on him. I don't know if he's like, I forgot if it was kicks or punches, but he's just like laying into him. So I feel like Hitman and the Anvil really settle into their role as the top heels in the company right now, the top tag team heels, and really put over, you know, themselves as the vicious champions more than when they were just kind of floating around as good as bad guys. Like, they're really, you know, the guys now. And Jimmy Hart, even though, you know, Bobby has, like, the main event guys, I feel like Jimmy is maybe the top manager now. He's got some gold. And the ending was a little, as you said, the ending kind of takes away a little bit, but I still gave it the extra half star that from you, JR. I think the pacing was great. I think the Bees kind of settled into the aggressiveness of the Hearts, and it ended up being just a great match. And this is probably the last time we'll see the Bees in kind of a major tag situation. I'm sure we'll see plenty of matches with them, but this might be their one, like, spotlight shot, I think. I don't know if we'll see them this high up again. Because you're going to see some more teams come in, and you're going to see the division really get bolstered over the next several months. So I think this was their big moment to get the one crack at the titles. And they wrestled gamely, and it was... I'm giving it 3.5, and it was the second best match of the night for me. But the Hearts successfully defend their newly minted championships, Kel.
Yeah, really good match. These two teams, like you said, I mean, they've had Great matches elsewhere. It was actually a year prior at MSG that they had that really great match, one that I give 4 stars. Yeah, I went 3 stars with this. It's really good. I kind of like the bees Nikes. I don't know. It's a different look. They're trying something different, at least. It was kind of modern touch. Heenan calls them tennies. Tennies? Are they wearing tennies?
That has to be an 80s thing.
Yeah, that was odd, yeah.
Even prior to the, yeah. I'd say like a 60s yeah. phrase, because it's coming from Bobby. Old-timey sort of phrase. Super fast-paced action. These two teams know each other so well. And I really like Blair's face in peril. Really good with some really good hope spots. And the healing by the Hearts was really good. And to your point, Scott, I think now that the Hearts have the belts, they have more confidence. I mean, they finally have direction. Especially, I think Brett, you know, kind of an insecure guy by nature, you know, being
really
given the
what
belt.
Makes you think that?
Oh, geez, I don't know. But being given the belt sort of validated everything, and you know, they've been drifting aimlessly for so long, but now that they have the belts, they have the confidence that, you know, the office is behind them, even though they kind of backdoored their way into the titles with the injury situation with Dynamite. But still, so they're running with it now. Yeah, and the crowd was totally into this match, as they always are for the Hearts and the Bees. You know, the Hearts always get the crowd into their matches eventually, even if they're a little cold at first. And, yeah, the ending was a little screwy with the interference, but yeah, you got to have the Hearts retain, go over, it protects the Bees. It wasn't a clean win, it was a tainted win. And yeah, really good tag match.
I had a feeling I was gonna be lower on this one. I thought it was really good. I don't know, I just feel like it didn't hit that gear I was waiting for it to hit. It may have because I kind of knew. Actually, I think I've watched it, right? I think Jeff and I talked about this on Jeff Learns Wrestling. Is this one you had recommended for that, Kelly? I think it is, right?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. So you can hear my thoughts on that show too, and hear Jeff's very, very unrefined thoughts on it too, on a previous episode of Jeff Learns Wrestling. We talk about another match from the show later on too, but yeah, I feel like it just never got into that. I thought it was really good, crisp and sound. For me, it just never kicked into that gear. Maybe because of the hype, I was waiting for more, and so maybe I was kind of ruined for, you know, by that point, but. Anyway, still really good, and yes, the Hearts retain their titles. So, all right, we're about halfway through here, guys. Why don't we go ahead and take a break, listen to some chatter about PlayStation.com. We'll come back. We'll still have our pop culture corner. We'll talk the rest of the show, and we'll break down some awards. What do you say?
Awards.
I am the one hiding under your bed, teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on 3 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Puri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
All right, Nation, we're back taking a look at the February 1987 house show. Of course, tonight is the World Series. I don't know if you guys knew this, but Pat Sajak of Wheel of Fortune, big Angels fan. I heard that somewhere recently. But he is at the game tonight, so maybe he's just, you know, just kind of living on a prayer, hoping that the nemesis of the Angels, the Dodgers, lose to the Astros. And another guy that was living on a prayer back in 1987, John Bon Jovi, scarf and all at that point? Probably not. But he was there, and he was singing that song, and it was number one this week in 1987. And here to tell us about the rest of the tunes that cracked the top ten is Scott Criscolo with the Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And yes, Pat Sajak, living on a prayer, sitting there with some who-is. Neither of them Vanna. I think Euchre was chasing him. Living on a Prayer from the Slippery When Wet album, number one this week. Of course, the poll came out 2 days before this on February 21st, 1987. And probably the second big hit, because I think we already had You Give Love a Bad Name, already number one. So the second number one off this album. Number two, a song that used to just infuriate me because it was so unbelievably annoying. The Georgia Satellites with Keep Your Hands to Yourself, with them singing in the back of the truck in the video. I fucking hated it. Chicago at number three with Will You Still Love Me. Jacob's Ladder by Huey Lewis and the News at number four. The multi-talented Samantha Fox. Well, I don't have to spell out what the other talents were. With Touch Me, I Want to Feel Your Body. Touch me, touch me. Number six, You Got It All by the Jets. Number seven, Ballerina Girl.
I wonder if they were number Richard. Five and then blew it at the last second, like the old Jets always do.
The Jets thought they were going to be number one, and then Jay Cutler left the game and everything fell apart. Madonna at number eight with Open Your Heart. I was actually watching the game at that moment. The minute I saw, I mean, you guys had a two-touchdown. The minute I saw him going to the locker room, I'm like, oh, this fucking game's over. You just felt it, right?
I said it in the chat. I said they were up to one, yeah. They were up two scores, and I said they're gonna. This has last second field goal loss written all over it, and there it was. You could just take because it was just so much time was left, and yeah, just whatever. I keep telling myself I shouldn't care this year. I'm trying not to, but then they win these stupid games and play well and get me sucked in.
Well, that's because the Giants are going to have a higher draft pick.
Yeah, they
have to trade with them to get a quarterback at this point. Whatever. I mean, right now they pick ninth, so it's. I mean, the dream's over of the number one pick. So whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Just gotta hope maybe they either make a trade or just whatever. Who the fuck knows at this point?
Yeah, really, who does?
Win all the games. Who cares?
A lot more football to play. At number eight, down six spots from two last week. Open Your Heart by Madonna. I get more of her. Love You Down by Ready for the World at number nine, and number 10, Change of Heart by WrestleMania alum Cyndi Lauper. So there's your top 10 on the Billboard chart for that week, February 21st, 1987. And Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi, your number one song.
Oh, whoa, indeed.
Oh, whoa, indeed. Let's go to the box office. Three movies. Only three. This one's a cheapo, JR. Usually we've been skipping these, but
my sister thought it was Living on the Edge, and we were at a bar one time, and it was playing, and she sang it, and everyone was like, what the fuck?
That's Aerosmith. That's not for another 6 years, Living on the Edge. All right, this one, I wasn't going to give you this one because it was one of the low shit movies, only made $179,000, but I just love the title. One Woman or Two?
The Story of Matt Rotella.
One cruise or two?
One whoa or two? I'll take them both.
Take them both. You'll get to that coming up in your little extreme revolution.
Not for a while.
Not for a while. A few years.
Am I looking that movie up or are we doing a different one?
Oh, you can look it up if you want.
What is it, One Woman or Two?
One Woman or Two. starring J.R. Cineo D'Amato.
No, let's get a little bit of a cast here. Starring Gerard Depardieu, Sigourney Weaver.
Yes.
That's about it. But not bad. It's a good top two. There. Makes an archaeological find of 2-million-year-old French woman. He calls it Laura. He's approached and conned by an American advertising executive masquerading as a charity organization executive in order to use the woman to for her own perfume advertising. This is quite the scheme.
Yes.
Later, the real charity organization executive turns up, and it all develops from there. Roger Ebert gave this film a half star. Add it all up, and what you've got is a good waste of good electricity. And I'm not talking about the electricity between the actors, but the talking about the current to the projector. And it's on his most hated films list. So there you go.
Wow.
Poor Gerard Depardieu.
Give it four stars. All right. Number two made $2.13 million.
Fat. Wasn't he like a kind of a hunky icon at one point?
Yes, he was like a hunky Frenchman.
Yeah, not anymore. Eating too many croissants.
Yeah, too many croissants. And now he's pleasantly plump. All right. Wait.
He was at 102 Dalmatians. So there you go. He's in Les Miserables, the TV miniseries.
Is he alive? I thought he died.
It wouldn't shock me. No, he's still alive. 68.
Okay, I thought he died.
Living in, he's born in France. Children, Guillaume, Julie, Roxanne, and Jean. I'm trying to say, what was the other movie he was in? What the fuck was he in? Remember that one?
I was going to say My Father the Foot, but that's my left foot. My Father the Son. Yeah, he was in something that was like well known.
My Father the Hero.
There you go.
1994? God, I didn't think it was that old. Starred Katherine Heigl was the dog. Wow, I don't remember.
Jesus, what was she, like 11?
Yeah.
Wow.
Andre Arnell, a Frenchman divorced from his wife, takes his teenage daughter Nicole on vacation to the Bahamas.
Oh, get a bonus here. It made no money. All right. Number two, a movie made $2.13 million. A comedy called Morgan Stewart's Coming Home. Why do I think Matthew Broderick was in this? Kind of like a bad knockoff of Ferris Bueller. I might be wrong.
It's because it was a bad knockoff of Ferris Bueller.
Oh, okay, so I was right. All right, I was good.
Yeah. The son of a Republican senator from Virginia spent most of his life away at boarding school. An eccentric boy, fan of horror films, his personality doesn't fit with the carefully calculated conservative image of his mother, as redesigned for their family. He's brought home to help with his father's campaign for re-election for senator, and unwittingly discovers that others are setting up the family for the fall. With the help of a zany new girlfriend, he manages to save the day and loosen up his family in the process. Starring John Cryer, Vivica Davis, Paul Gleason, Nicholas Pryor, and Lynn Redgrave. So there you go.
Interesting.
We got one to two women and 2.5 men going on here tonight.
There we go. Yes. So does that mean this movie is winning? Because it made the most money that weekend. $3.26 million. It is a drama titled Death Before
Dishonor.
Dishonor.
Oh, there you go. I was just doing the Ring of Honor thing.
Nope,
right, here we go.
This is pay-per-view.
Gunnery Sergeant Burns is in charge of the Marine Security Guard Detachment at the U.S. Embassy in the Middle East. When terrorists attack the compound taking hostages, Burns becomes a one-man Marine Corps in an attempt to rescue the hostages and kill the terrorists. Starring Fred Dreyer, Brian Keith, Joanna Pakula, Joseph Jian, Sasha Mitchell, Paul Winfield, and a whole bunch of other people that we don't know. Kind of a shit week for movies.
Yep, that was it. And there's your top three movies from the week.
I'm sure Ring of Honor had better. Death Before Dishonor.
Yes. In the NHL, only one game. None of our locals are in action. The North Stars beat the Canadiens 4-3. So that was it. It was the only NHL game. In the NBA on this Monday, I wonder if it was one of the birthdays. Was it like Lincoln or Washington's birthday? I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been President's Day. Yeah. Wait, when did President's Day start? Was it after this when they combined it?
Oh, well,
it and
after
made it President's
this.
Yeah.
Right. I think President's Day was like the early. Was like the late 90s, early 2000s. I think they mushed the two together.
Washington's birthday is a U.S. federal holiday, celebrating the third Monday in honor of George Washington, first president of the U.S. The day is known as President's Day and is often an occasion to honor the incumbent president and all persons who have served a president, not just GW. The day is a state holiday in most states, blah, blah, blah. I don't know when it switched. It doesn't say.
Anyway.
Colloquially?
Oh, well. Colloquially. Anyway, six games were in the NBA that day. Your high scorer, the human highlight film himself, Dominique. Dominique Wilkins had 42 as the Hawks beat the Sixers 112-103. Larry Bird had 35. The Celtics, the defending world champions, beat the Nets 116-103. Cleveland beat Washington. Dallas blew out the Warriors. Houston beat Denver. Hakeem Olajuwon had a double-double, 31 points, 14 rebounds. And the Supersonics beat the Clippers 124-112. Celtics lead the Atlantic.
Still waiting for you to give us when the Lakers beat the Supersonics from Ice Cube song.
That's right.
Today was a good day.
Fucked around and got a triple-double, which is what
waiting for the game. It's coming. I can feel it.
And if in that game, he did fuck around and got a triple-double. Celtics lead the Atlantic 41-14. Pistons lead the Central 35-17. Mavericks lead the Midwest at 35-19. And the Lakers lead the Pacific with the best record in the league at 41-13.
So February 16th was Washington's birthday that year. So this is not the holiday.
Week before. Okay. The AP Top 10 College Basketball poll came out the next day. Your top 10, 1 through 10. UNLV, and this is pre-Grandmama. This is Armand Gilliam.
I don't count it then.
Yes. Indiana 2, number 3, North Carolina, 4, Temple, 5, DePaul.
There you go.
That's ever going to happen.
Powerhouse.
Joel Meyer, Ray Meyer's son. Like, that's ever going to happen again. Purdue 6.
Hey, they're building that arena downtown. You don't know. It could draw.
Pretty.
I mean, not downtown, on campus.
On campus. Nice arena. Georgetown 7 with Reggie Williams. Iowa 8, Pittsburgh 9. And Alabama 10. And finally, JR, I grabbed this off the news because it happened on this day, and I think
you just have all these newspapers in your apartment from like the actual time. It's all stacked up,
hoarding stacks.
Yeah, every Sunday night you'd have Greeny just rifling through these newspapers looking for stories.
Putting it on my wall like the fucking the X Files.
I picture like Armento, like the crypt keeper, just fucking opening the vault in his little tuxedo.
If I ever had to see him with a Teddy Long mullet, I think I'd lose my fucking mind.
Wiping the cobwebs away. Yes, February 23rd. Yes. Okay, let's pull out the newspaper from the vaults.
You can see him wearing those big fucking black hats. Oh, Christ. Anyway, I grabbed this story, JR, because this is all you. You're a big, like me, big astronomy guy. You like outer space things and cool things like that. Have you ever heard of SN... You probably didn't.
Oh, yes.
SN 1987A. It's a supernova in the outskirts of the Tarantula Nebula in the Large Magellanic Cloud, which is a nearby dwarf galaxy. About that.
Okay.
It occurred approximately 51.4 kiloparsecs from Earth, which is, I don't know, about 2 blocks. No, I don't know. This was close enough that it was
probably further than 2 blocks. I don't think Earth would have survived. It was
I know.
Kiloparsec? How do you spell that?
What?
Kiloparsec.
A kiloparsec? Kilo, K-I-L-O, parsec, P-A-R-S-E-C-S. E-C, a kiloparsec.
Kiloparsec, probably.
Kiloparsec.
It's a distance of 1,000 parsecs.
You know what it is? It's, if this makes any sense, it's 168,000 light years.
Yeah, one parsec is 3.26 light years. So
okay, so it's pretty far.
So, well, that's how long it took. So this thing actually happened, how many light years you said?
168,000 light years from Earth.
So that's when it happened. It was 168,000 light years ago, and we're just seeing it then.
Yeah. It was close enough that it was easily visible to the naked eye, and it could be seen from the southern hemisphere. It was the closest observed supernova since SN1604, which occurred in the Milky Way itself. The light from the new supernova reached Earth on this date, February 23rd, 1987. As the first supernova discovered in 1987, it was labeled 1987A. Its brightness peaked in May with an apparent magnitude of about 3 and slowly declined in the following month. It was the first opportunity for modern astronomers to study the development of a supernova in great detail, and its observations have provided much insight into core collapse supernovae. This supernova provided the first chance to confirm by direct observation the radioactive source of the energy for visible light emissions via the detection of predicted gamma ray line radiation, like the Incredible Hulk, from two of its abundant radioactive nuclei, etc., etc., etc. So there you go, JR.
Space is so cool.
Space is awesome. All right, so there you go. And there is your pop culture report. And then somebody used supernova as a wrestler's name probably in about 6 years. So unless you were in Mexico now. So.
Yeah, maybe they're created right. Then.
There you go. So there is your pop culture report.
All right, Gorilla Monsoon. Gorilla Monsoon is backstage talking to this newcomer, Outback Jack. Jack talks about how marvelous MSG is and rambles about Australia's version of the Mecca. Gorilla asks what experience in Australia would help him here, and Jack just rambles around about tossing around a bat or something. Jack says he will give it the best he can. So a lot of insight here to what makes Jack tick. Gorilla then talks to Jake Roberts, who suffered a concussion courtesy of the Honky Tonk Man over the weekend and is wrestling against doctor's orders tonight. Jake says he has low morals and is going to be patient, leaving Honky alone while he works out his revenge plan. He then talks about his match tonight and says he likes challenges and working for the hard things in life, and he thinks his opponent head may go through the mat when he hits the DDT tonight. Gorilla then talks to the Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart. They joke around about Jake's headache. Honky says he feels good and will feel better after tonight, and after he takes care of Pedro Morales, Jake the Snake, he's then gunning for Hulk Hogan and the world title after that. Gorilla then talks to Randy Savage and Bobby Heenan about their big match tonight. Bobby says there'll be no issues between Harley Race and Randy Savage because they're professionals. They bust on Ricky Steamboat and brag about what is to come. That then takes us to the ring for the debut of the aforementioned Outback Jack. Peter Stillsbury began wrestling in Canada in Stu Hart Stampede Wrestling in November 1986. Was a native of Australia, and due to the popularity of Crocodile Dundee, they brought him into WWF later that same month under the name Outback Jack. Of course, if you put the dates together, debuted in November of 86 as a wrestler, debuted in the WWF in early 87 in this gimmick. Quite clearly not very well-greased as a wrestler, still pretty new. So, and the Dodgers have just tied the game 1-1, for anyone that cares. There you go. Outback Jack makes his arrival. And, Scott, I'm really not saying this because I think you're old. What was... Because I know you are. But, no, tell us about the Crocodile Dundee Mania. Like, I vaguely remember it because I would have been, like, 6. Like, when did that come out? Was it long before this?
86.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
So, like...
Actually...
Yeah, it looks like
on weekends. Let me see.
86.
It was in theaters forever. That's all I remember.
September 26th, 1986. It came out in U.S. April in Australia. Yeah. And then I remember the Crocodile Dundee 2 better. And I remember, you know, obviously, like he did a lot of commercials and stuff. Like I remember all that. I don't know if I've ever actually seen the movie, but I know it became like a big fucking thing, like in pop culture, right? Like. The yeah. Aussie stuff, like, really became, like, a touch point that everyone got into. Like, it really kind of took over the fervor. Do you remember any of that? Like, was it as big as I've always kind of heard it was?
I mean, kind of. I mean, this was a big movie, and it came out. It was out, you know, in September, so it was relatively new. The sequel came out the following year in 88. I mean, it was a big deal, but... I don't know if that entirely had to do with them bringing him in. I think maybe they just wanted like a cool kind of exotic type wrestler.
No, I think it definitely had to do with the movie.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't imagine they would have brought this guy off the fucking bench for a new guy, you know, this green, if it wasn't for like pop culture. Do you remember any of it, Kelly? I mean, obviously in Canada, but I don't know. I just remember like hearing a lot about it at the time that like America kind of became obsessed with Australian culture when this movie came out.
Yeah, well, Canada is obsessed with American culture too, so it's, you know, yeah. We were completely, everything that you guys were getting, we were pretty much getting too. So yeah, like I said, I remember it just being in theaters forever. Like back in those days, in the newspapers, you would have ads for the movies, and it would have like 35 weeks, 36 weeks, like they'd be counting how many weeks it was in the theaters. And I remember Crocodile Dundee got to like some ridiculous number where it just kept going, and it people just couldn't get enough of it for whatever reason.
It made $328 million overall.
Yeah,
in the U.S., it was made for a budget of under 10. It was the second highest grossing film in 1986 in the U.S. and the second highest grossing film worldwide at the box office as well.
Yeah.
46 million tickets sold for this thing. Mm.
And yeah, just to be funny, Outback Steakhouse opened exactly 1 year later.
I'm sure it was that.
In February of 88.
I'm sure it had to do with that.
Yeah, it definitely did. It definitely did. So, yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, because you could tell. We'll talk about the match in a minute. And obviously when you watch the squashes, I mean, he was literally, and I've been watching him. He literally was on primetime literally every week. And the squash, and there, I mean, and he fought your boy Frenchie like 1,000 times. So it was rough. It was very rough. But, yeah, I mean, it definitely, people got into the, you know, boomerangs and all the kind of the symbolism of Australia and the outback and New Zealand and that kind of thing. Maybe Tony Garea was relating to him somehow. I don't know. But to push a guy this hard when like you literally never heard of him, definitely proves that point about the pop culture. So
yeah, I mean, they clearly had a feeling that they wanted to get in on it. All right, big debut out by Jack. Lots of hype. Barry O, his opponent here, back on the scene after some time away from MSG. Jack has some real funky music because he meanders out, giving thumbs up along the way. Gorilla says Jack is getting a big ovation, but the crowd sounds more confused, I thought, than anything. Like, I don't hear anything. Bobby calls him Outhouse Jack and mocks Australia as we get underway. Gorilla calls the Outback, compares it to Arizona and New Mexico, which I thought was random. Jack slams Barry down and follows with a hip toss. Barry bails to the reset, and Bobby compares him to Crocodile Dundee. Barry returns and goes to the eyes and punches away before planting Jack with a shoulder block. Barry works over Jack a bit until Jack comes back with a back elbow and splash for two. Bobby keeps cracking jokes about Jack as Barry yanks him into the corner by his belt and drops a knee. Jack gets an atomic drop in clothesline and then hits another one from behind, kind of doing like a boomerang thing for the win. Just complete dog shit. I thought both guys looked like crap. Awful first showing for Jack, who looked just completely lost at all times out there. Bumped around like a stiff board. Just a mess. It didn't help, too, that he looked old. Like, he's just, like, not in great shape. He's kind of old-looking. Like, he wasn't, like, a handsome, young Australian guy like Paul Hogan kind of was. You know what I mean? Like, he's just... And I don't know if Paul Hogan's even handsome. I imagine at the time people thought he was.
He's but, ruggedly handsome.
Yes, ruggedly handsome. But Jack's not even that. You know what I mean? He looks like Paul Hogan's fucking drunk uncle that you would see. You know, like, just awful. It's just a fucking mess. He looked terrible. And Barry O just had no interest in helping him at all here. What'd you think of this, Kelly?
Yeah, dud for me. If we see more Outback Jack, we'll see more duds, I'm sure. I don't know if we're going to see more Outback Jack at MSG anyway. Yeah, Barry O, he was gone for a while, so he's back. Another random return. Outback's music dubbed in, I guess, the rights to Tie Me Kangaroo Down were too expensive. We get now like some just random like Australian sounding noises.
Yeah,
you're in the outback. Oh, God, it's horrible.
There's some crickets. You're in Chad Campbell's backyard.
Outhouse Jack. Outhouse Jack is perfect. Heenan's great. I mean, he came up with Billy Jerkanes, and now he's got Outhouse Jack. Awesome. I don't really remember Jack wrestling in Calgary in late 86. I mean, I was watching the TV at that time. I kind of vaguely do. I remember the vignettes hyping Jack on TV were on week after week for seemingly forever before he finally debuted. I definitely remember that.
Yeah, mate.
Yeah, and yeah, this was bad. I knew it was going to be. I've seen other Outback Jack matches, and the poor guy, I mean, he was a total outsider. There's stories that, you know, Dynamite Kid in particular just ribbed him mercilessly backstage. The one where they, what did they do? They left him naked in an elevator or something when he was totally passed out drunk. One night in a hotel or something like that. Some and other like really cruel,
so
cruel ribs.
He actually made his debut in November of '86 in the WWF, so he was not working very long when he showed up. Because he definitely started in November '86 with Stu. So I mean, he must have just been a couple weeks into his career when they brought him out.
Yeah, because I looked this up earlier because I wondered how much experience he did have, and no, it looks like he was totally new, right out of Stu's dungeon. I can't imagine how that went. And he didn't really do too much in the WWE. He was pushed like crazy. I mean, they totally capitalized on the Crocodile Dundee phenomenon. And yeah, but he burned out pretty quick.
And he's until actually May of '88 is his final televised match on Superstars in a tag match. So he sticks around for quite a while.
He does.
His brief
but
career
he's basically
concluded.
A jobber by the, for the last like year he's in there.
Here you go. This is great. This is very fitting. His career concluded at the only wrestling event ever held in Kissimmee, Florida's Tupperware Convention Center on May 15th, 1988. That's about it. He did some Highlander game stuff, and it didn't sound like he ever really wrestled again. It seems like that was about it.
Yeah, I think the experience.
I think he does real estate now or something now, if I've read somewhere.
Really?
In 2000,
well, I hope
he sells shrubs.
In 2003, PWI did a list of the greatest 400 wrestlers in history of WWE, and Outback Jack is ranked 371, which seems high.
29 bastards under him.
Seems high. Jack stated in an interview that he does not often think about his time with the WWF. Recently appeared on an internet radio show, Cloverleaf Radio, and said he's 100% blind and uses a computer program to read email. Sounds kind of sad. Way to go, guys. I'm not going to blind guy.
There we go.
This is such a fitting wrestling theme for this guy.
This is his theme?
He should have had a manager named Cockatoo Cool Cool.
Hey, guys, I have good news for you. It looks like we see him at MSG like 3 more times.
Oh, God.
Wow. Yeah.
3 more
throughout
times.
The year, like October is the last time we'll see him.
He's going to be 1987 CVAffy.
Yes. Much worse.
Could have had a great tag team. Could have had Cockatoo Cool Cool and Cock Robin all at the same time. All right. So anyway,
yeah, we see him three more times. So very exciting. Lovely. Very exciting.
Wow. All right. 3 minutes and 33 seconds. We're not going to get back. Why don't we move on? it's shit.
Cock-a-boo-boo down, indeed.
Not a debut here coming up, JR, in our next match, but kind of a gimmick repackage or a gimmick switch, and the crowd is into it.
And they are, because it's Jake the Snake Roberts taking on King Kong Bundy, and Jake the Snake has officially turned face. The fans basically force this to happen. I mean, they had Jake, obviously, we saw a little bit of it back in November at Sunday's main event. We had the match with Randy Savage that he was more favored. And then they put him into a feud with Hulk Hogan early on in the house shows, and they canceled it almost immediately because Jake was out popping Hogan. Fans were chanting for DDT. I've mentioned before our buddy Jim. And she saw one of their matches in Providence, one of the few they had. I think that was one of the big ones where Jake just got cheered like crazy. And they end up turning him face. Was the honky thing the conduit, or is he already kind of turning?
Well, the match against Savage on Saturday Night's main event was the first seed. And then, basically the honky thing. There may have been other – actually, there may have been other people on the Snake Pit before – honky other heels that he was sort of antagonizing, but I can't remember.
Yeah, well, he DDT'd Hogan on the Snake Pit, and fans cheered there. And that's when the plans kind of got aborted. And Jake kind of since jokingly thanked the fans for ruining everything. He officially turned face with Honky. So, yeah, I think it's when he gets smashed on the Snake Pit. They referenced it early in interviews. Honky, the weekend before this, smashed Jake with his guitar. And as the story goes, of course, it was not gimmicked like it should have been. It was a real guitar. and ends up really causing issues for Jake and really kind of starts his run. I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing he had an addictive personality anyway, so things might have gotten to that point for him. But this is what he credits as kind of being the start of his addiction to drugs. Which starts with the pain pills here when he fucked his neck up at the hands of Honky. So, but he is a face, and they are set up for WrestleMania. Bundy is a bit lost on the card right now. Still has enough cachet to make this feel big. Like, this felt like a big-time bout. Gorilla reminds us that Jake is in here against Doctor's orders, but wanted to meet his contractual obligations. Jimmy Hart swaps in for Heenan in the booth, saying he wants to scout Jake and also mocks Jake's head injury. We start with a lockup as we see Damian trying to bust through a hole in the sack, which I thought was kind of funny. Like, I don't know if they did that on purpose or the sack just happened to have a hole in it, but Damian's like consistently popping his head through it. Throughout the match, really freaking out Jimmy. The lockup continues as Jake backs Bundy to the corner, buries a shoulder block to the gut before slugging away. Jake keeps punching away and drops Bundy with a hard right hand. Bundy regroups and we get a test of strength as Jimmy and Gorilla argue over Danny Davis. Bundy forces Jake to the mat. Things reset again as Jake grabs a side headlock and dodges the right hand on a break, frustrating Bundy. King Kong Bundy finally grabs control with a big body slam and a hard elbow drop for a near fall. He aggressively assaults Jake as Damian's making more and more progress on escaping the sack. Bundy drops a hard knee for another two count and goes to a chin lock as Bobby and Jimmy talk about their dislike of snakes. Jake breaks free and catches Bundy with a knee lift, but Bundy dodges the DDT. Jake drops an elbow drop, but Bundy rams him to the corner to block another DDT and then pitches Jake outside. Bundy follows and pitches Jake back in, but apparently Bundy was counted out when he went out to get him. Jake dodges an avalanche and unleashes the snake, but Bundy escapes. Was building into a fun match, and then we just kind of got that stupid ending where Bundy was on the floor for like 2 seconds, and somehow he got counted out. I think it's that weird rule where, like, if you go out during the count, it starts suddenly applying to you that they use sometimes. Sometimes it breaks the count. Sometimes it continues. I don't know if there's a difference. I thought the finish was very confusing and made no sense. I thought Bunny could have just lost here or done a DQ where he just grabbed a chair. Just something more understandable than this. Jake is popping big as a face, though, getting huge reactions. Looks great thanks to his strong selling. The first half of this was fun, and it was just getting going to me when it ended prematurely. So I went a star and a half on this, and I was kind of hoping for more. What do you think, Scott?
I gave this 2 stars. I thought it was well worked in the sense that I kind of like the combo, particularly with Jake as a babyface and taking on a guy bigger than him, somebody that we hadn't seen Jake face and the intrigue of can he put the DDT on him. And Jake actually in the interview had great logic. He's like, well, he's going to hit the ground harder and faster because he's heavier. So I thought that was kind of cool. I like the fact he's using logic here to justify the finisher. So I thought that was pretty cool. Bundy put on the extra oomph in this match. He took some when Bundy's motivated. And let me tell you something. I feel like I've watched like all of Bundy's career in the last like year because based on wherever he is and whoever he's facing, whatever time of the year. Right now, I'm kind of early. I'm also watching like early in his career in World Class in '82. I don't know if you've had a chance. I haven't had a chance to listen yet, Kel, but I don't know if you guys have referenced that on the show. Mm-hmm. When he really sets his mind, when he can really put on like great matches and. For him and be really active. And this match was one of them. I mean, he was taking some huge bumps for a big guy who almost was going to job, but didn't quite do that. Your match time, 9:17. It was a good hunk. I enjoyed the match and I enjoyed Bundy just as much as I enjoyed Jake. Worked for me, Cal. What'd you think?
Yeah, I liked it too. I went 2 stars. I was interested by the matchup, intriguing match between these two guys, kind of like a precursor to Roberts and Andre the Giant a few years later with smaller man and the bigger guy. But yeah, the finish totally sucked. It was a typical crappy WWF finish from the time that's confusing and you're not sure exactly who got counted out or what happened, you know. And, you know, the crowd was totally into it before that. They were buzzing. You know, the tease for the DDT got a big, you could feel the crowd was on the edge of their seats. And this could have been a lot better, because this is a unique match. I don't think they really follow up with anything with these two guys again. It's too bad. Could have had more. But I love Roberts, and yeah, it's cool to see him now as a face, because the crowd totally, you know, willed him to be a face. They really got behind him. They're chanting "Go Jake, go!" You don't really hear chants like that at MSG, so that was another unique thing. So yeah, a bittersweet sort of match. It started off well, but then the crappy finish derailed it. But I still gave it 2 stars.
It's a credit to Bundy too, and how much they built him up and established him that he still feel. I mean, he's done really nothing for about a year, but I mean, he feels like a big deal. I know he did some of the stuff with Stud and everything in the machines, but I mean, really on the radar, not a ton. But he feels like a big deal and a threat still here. So they, I mean, it speaks to the volumes of how they built him in late '85 and early '86.
Yeah, if Roberts would have hit a DDT on him, I can't imagine the pop.
Yeah, it would have been crazy.
Humongous.
Been ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were kind of, that was kind of what I was looking for, even though in the back of my mind, I kind of knew that wasn't going to happen. I hadn't seen this match before, so.
Well, but maybe you'll get it next time, because we're going to see more of them next week. So.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Our show continues as Pedro Morales, the ever-present MSG stalwart, who just won't go away, takes on the Honky Tonk Man. Honky's changed quite a bit since that first, when we first saw him in December. Remember, he was doing that crazy frantic like gyration moves and like moving like at warp speed. He's kind of slowed down now and taking control of the character. And we're starting to see him kind of just settle in a bit more. Honky and Jimmy Hart gyrate to the ring for a tilt with Pedro. Honky's really gaining steam, being presented as a legit threat with Jimmy thanks to the guitar assault over the weekend. Like, I thought that was a big thing too. He wasn't kind of not really like a joke guy anymore. Looks a little bit more lethal. Pedro gets his usual warm welcome as Gorilla's back to hyping Mania. Slick comes in on commentary, and now business picks up for us here because he is fantastic. He rips Coco, saying he's on the top of his hit list, and this is the second time he got involved in his business. We get plenty of stalling and lots of it as Slick says Honky looks and dresses better than Elvis ever did. And Gorilla must be like an Elvis diehard. He calls him a great person again. He always calls Elvis a great person. Like, he was a great entertainer. Was he a great, like, what did he do that made him a great person? Gorilla, unless I just don't know. Maybe I'm not educated in the ways of Elvis. I guess he was in the military, right?
He was drafted. He didn't.
Right, he didn't join.
But at the tail end of his career, he's a fat drug addict. So I don't know.
Yeah, Gorilla's like super into like romanticizing Elvis. Like every time he comes up, Elvis Presley was a great human being, a legend. Honky finally gets to the ring and walks right into a pair of Pedro slams before bailing back out. Honky returns and tries to work the arm, but Pedro reverses control and lands an atomic drop as Gorilla shits on Slick, Bobby, and Jimmy. Honky bails again to regroup and comes back in and begs off some more. Honky shoots Pedro to the corner, whiffs on a charge, and eats some left hands from Pedro. Honky ends up back on the floor again as Slick wants a DQ and keeps butchering, saying Monsoon. He's calling Monson. Honky returns and takes control with a side headlock and some punches, but Pedro blocks a kick and slugs away. Honky buries a knee to the gut to send Pedro through the ropes and onto the ropes and onto the Japanese table. Pedro rolls back in as Honky's dancing around. Honky lays in some basic blows and knocks Pedro outside. Pedro pulls him out and slams him to the barricade in the post. Both men get back in and Honky recovers for the suplex for two. Honky whiffs on an elbow off the middle rope, and Pedro goes to work with punches and gets a small package for two. Pedro turns Honky into a Boston Crab, but Jimmy hops up on the ring apron, and Pedro releases to chase him. Honky trips up Pedro and rolls him up with his feet on the rope for the cheap win. Nothing doing here. A lot of stalling and bland strikes. Some heat and psychology bumped the grade a slight bit, but Honky's all shtick. But the shtick is catching on, so it's working for him, but he's all shtick. Pedro's Pedro, and he actually lays down here for once. Of course, not clean, of course. He'd have the ropes involved, but still, he gets his shoulders to the mat, which is an improvement. I went 1 star on this, Kelly.
Yeah, so did I. I'm a big fan of Honky, especially early days, early years in the WWF. Honky was really just a great dickhead heel and just so awesome at riling up the crowd, you know, and stalling. It's just straight out of Memphis right here. And Slick on commentary was super entertaining. So there was, you know, some, you know, bells and whistles added to this match that made it easier to get through. Because, I mean, Morales is, he's as stale as weak old bread in early 1987. It's just, and this is actually his final MSG match.
Oh, is it? Oh, thank God.
But I mean, you know, one of the all-time MSG legends, definitely a sad end to his run here. You know, we got, you know, one kind of last glimpse of classic Pedro when he got fired up on the outside and rammed Honky into the guardrail and ring post, and the crowd got into it, and you kind of almost had like flashbacks to younger Pedro there.
Does he stick around for a while longer though?
He does, yeah, but not too much longer. He was on TV still occasionally in 87, I know that for sure. He, teaming with Tito Santana often. But, yeah, this is it. One last fired up comeback. One last small package. that
November 16th, he wrestles.
Yeah, and that was that Legends Battle Royal.
Oh, right. Yeah, it looks like September 15th might be it for him.
Yeah, so yeah, he would.
And even then, it's sporadic. July, he didn't really wrestle since July, so yeah, it looks like by July he's pretty much tapered off.
Yeah, and he started in the early 60s, so I mean, it was beyond, it was well past time for Pedro to hang up the boots.
He ends up doing some Spanish commentary, though, right?
Yeah, he would. Yeah, he would, and I think he was involved with the company for quite a few years afterwards. Actually,
yeah, road agent, living. Commentator. Returned to his role. He actually worked at WCW in the 90s doing nitros and pay-per-views as well. Made a few wrestling-related appearances in WCW, and that's it. That was pretty much it for him. Yeah, he's still alive. Yep.
Yeah, but you never really hear anything about him or see pictures of Pedro in, you know, modern times. Like, he's completely dropped off the face of the earth almost. I did hear that he was in bad health a couple of years ago, but he seems to have rallied and
he has a Parkinson's, so that's why he
well then he's not doing too well. That's too bad. Well, bye bye Pedro. I mean, we mocked you, and I mocked him with the guys on Titans often, but I mean, he was a legend. He probably deserves to be in like a major Hall of Fame for his drawing power in the 60s and 70s. He was a huge star. We're just seeing the sad tail end of his career, where he was in meaningless matches at MSG every month. That's too bad.
And not putting anybody over.
Yeah, until the
or clear anyway. Yeah. Your official match time here, 11:58. I gave this half a star. I hated it. Again, Pedro's just not good, and Honky's mannerisms. I mean, so territory. I mean, it's got Memphis written all over it. All this fucking around, and it did nothing for me. I was surprised, Pedro, yeah, he jobbed, but he actually got to come down the ramp instead of already being in the ring. He even gets an entrance. I was getting a little nervous when Gorilla and Slick were getting into this picking cotton conversation. It was kind of going down a slippery slope that I hope they weren't going to go anywhere near, but I like how Slick said that he hasn't seen Jake, even though Jake was just in the last match. That was pretty funny. I haven't seen Jake Roberts anywhere. I like how Slick was calling Gorilla Monson. Let me tell you something, Monson.
Yeah,
this is awesome. I love it. Slick was great. Honky's offense is just putrid. I have to admit, Kel, I don't disagree with you that much. I hated him early on. His in-ring stuff is trash. You could tell that he was in Memphis or in the South. Just not good. And then you got Pedro, who doesn't sell much anyway. It was a recipe for disaster, and the fact that we had to sit through 12 minutes of it was just worse. So I gave it half a star. It just wasn't good, and I'd like to think we're going to get more out of Honky as time moves on, and we're not going to get anything good out of Pedro from here on out. But not a fan. Half a star. Not a fan.
Yeah, but I mean, Honky wasn't supposed to be a good wrestler. That was part of his heat, was that.
Yeah, I guess
He kept winning and kept later retaining the IC belt, even though he was obviously, you know, not one of the best guys on the roster and far from it. So that was definitely part of his heat.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, I suppose. But it was just getting unwatchable as this match progressed. And I can't believe we had to watch 12 minutes of it. I would have been happy with like 5 minutes of it. So. Which takes us, JR, speaking of matches that suck, this next one does not. It is our main event of the evening.
It is, and I am not going to miss Pedro. So here we go.
Not at all.
Our big six-man tag that beautifully sets up three of the big matches at WrestleMania, loaded with six legends of the ring, is Ricky Steamboat, Junkyard Dog, and Roddy Piper take on Randy Savage, Harley Race, and Adrian Adonis. Just a huge match to set the stage for Pontiac, loaded with star power, tons of heat. The entrances alone were a great scene. All the presents and heat, even though none of them get theme music for any, not even Savage, just all of them coming out and just feel, they all feel like a big deal. Like, this is, this tells you the star power of this time period, that these six guys come to the ring and they all feel just as big as each other at this point. They all feel, and they're not even the top guys, you know what I mean? But they all feel like they could run the promotion at this point in their careers, you know? So it's, and the Dodgers take a 3-1 lead. It feels like such a big deal overall. These guys just feel dominant. So here we go. Slick calls Liz a fox, which made me laugh. Fink says this is Piper's final Madison Square Garden match, and he gets a monster ovation for it, and it would indeed be his last one for 2.5 years. We get underway with Roddy Piper and Adonis, but Adonis bails and tags Savage. Piper decks Race, tags Steamboat, but Savage goes scurrying as Gorilla's hyping Mania again. Savage returns and Steamboat works him with arm drags and chops until he tags in Race. Steamboat runs in Race into JYD's head, which Slick compares to eating a piece of log. Slick is awesome in this match. JYD tags in and is all over Race as the crowd chants him on. JYD slugs Race to the floor as Slick says JYD can't read or write. Race returns and lands a headbutt and tags in Savage and chokes away. Savage goes up top but hops down as Steamboat shakes the ropes. JYD drops Savage with a headbutt and tags in Steamboat, comes in with chops. Adonis tags in and gets a back suplex, but Steamboat escapes and tags Piper. Adonis tries to escape, but Piper nabs him and things break down with a big brawl. Adonis and Race double suplex Piper, but Steamboat makes the save. Adonis locks Piper in a sleeper, but Roddy breaks a hold and gets one of his own. Race makes a save and Piper tags in the dog as Gorilla thinks this should have been a big match with everyone in at once. Slick again says that JYD can't read as Gorilla says he's going to tell Dog what's being said. Savage works over Dog and tags in Adonis, who punches away. Everyone ends up brawling on the floor, or Piper whacks Adonis with a chair. Things get cleaned up as Piper takes Race over with a back suplex for two, but then the bell rings as you find out Adonis and the Junkyard Dog were counted out, which is kind of odd timing since the ref was counting pins before the bell rang. Slick calls JYD an idiot as Piper and Race keep the match going. Savage tags in and works over Piper in the corner, but Piper fights through it and pokes Race in the eye before running Macho into the corner. Race comes in to block a tag, and then Savage chokes away at Piper. Race tags in, but Piper blocks and reverses a suplex before making the tag. Steamboat cleans house on Race, battering him and picking him up after a near fall. Piper comes in, and we get a double clothesline for two. Dragon knocks Savage outside and lands a chop to the head off the top on Race for two. Steamboat gets Race in a small package, but Savage sneaks in and reverses them, allowing Race to eliminate the Dragon. I thought this was really well done, because Savage screws Steamboat and gets one up on him, but Steamboat saves some face thanks to the cheating. So I thought that was really well done. Dragon goes over to Piper and fires him up, and the crowd is rallying Hot Rod as they're lingering near his final moments at MSG. Piper goes right at Race and hammers away at him until Savage helps out and knocks him down. Piper recovers and peppers Race before knocking him outside. Piper follows out, slugs away and fights off Savage. Race shoves Piper back inside, where Savage takes over and chokes away. Race comes in, but Piper fights them both off until he's overwhelmed. Race hits a power slam for two, but Piper comes back with a gut-wrench suplex for a near fall until Savage saves Race. Race then hooks Piper from behind, but Piper dodges a Savage double axe and nails the King by accident. Piper covers and eliminates Race to draw the match even at 1-1. Race lingers, but Piper decks him and hits Savage with a bulldog. Savage begs off, but Piper bites his hand, and Savage slaps Piper, who gets pissed off and fired up. Savage runs away, but Piper chases him around. Back inside, Savage drills Piper with an axe blow and then blocks a sunset flip with a hard right hand. Savage follows with a clothesline for two and chokes away, but the two end up wiping each other out with a hard double shoulder block. Savage ends up outside as Piper plays possum in the ring. Savage returns and heads up top, but Piper rolls out of the way and dodges the big elbow and gets a small package. I think it's in honor of a tribute to Pedro Morales for the win. This was a great main event loaded with great workers. The heat and booking was top-notch. Gorilla and Slick were awesome on commentary. Everyone looked good. The heat set for Mania. No one looked behind at all. They all were locked in. A great, great match. Fitting MSG farewell for Hot Rod. Gets a big pop to end the whole match. Gets the win over Savage, kind of a dream match that we're not going to get to really see. I went 4 stars on this. And then after the match, just real quick, Gorilla talks to Piper about his final match and goodbye to MSG. Talks about how hated he was and how he pays the fans back now by giving 100%. And his last great quest will be against Adrian Adonis at WrestleMania. He came in a winner and is going out a winner. So a really great package, very emotional, awesome match. Like I said, 4 stars. What'd you think, Scott?
Words can't describe it. I was this close, and I have my finger of my thumb, like an inch from this being my first five-star refresh. I gave it 4.5. Fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
2022 your runtime. Other than Hogan, you really can't get much better than this. Six guys who just get it. And we've been talking this whole show about WrestleMania 3 hard sell. You can't get much harder sell than putting these six guys in the ring. Because other than Hogan Andre, these are your three biggest matches. So it was perfect. I did love Slick. Slick was fucking. He might be in one of my MVP candidates later on. He was fantastic, saying that the dog was illiterate and greasy and Mr. Monson. He was great. You could argue right now. We're talking about like guys that are over. You could argue right now that Piper may just be as over as even Jake, and maybe even as Hogan. I mean, when Piper was announced, the place lost its shit. I mean, it was crazy. Heat-wise, for this whole match, this may be the hottest non-Hogan Garden match in the last, like, 3 years. I mean, it's just ridiculous. The crowd was all over this. Combination of the three awesome baby faces, and then you got the heels. One of them still gets cheered by the baby faces. It was crazy. My only, I mean, it's not a dig or anything, but I can't believe they didn't bring in the Emerald Band for Piper. If this was his last hurrah at the Garden, I would have thought they'd have brought the Emerald Band in. Live pipes for the last time. I think that would have been ridiculous.
They probably don't want to spend the money since he's leaving.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. The booking of the pins was perfect. You give Savage, you give Harley the cheap roll up on Steamboat. Have Savage stick it to Steamboat one more time before we get to March 29th at Pontiac. Making an elimination was genius. Because if this was just like a regular one fall six man, it still would have been awesome. But I think you would have had to temper a lot of it because we only would have gotten one pin. This was crazy. It was just crazy. And I'll take Savage Piper one-on-one in this era 7 days a week and twice on Sundays. They were awesome in those last, like, what, 4.5, 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And that might be, before we get to his big match in about 5 years, you know, 5 years, that might be the most actual wrestling we've seen Piper do. So
you could tell if someone was leaving it on the table, you know, just like emptying the tank here.
Emptying the tank.
Totally.
I was this close to making it my first five-star Garden match. I gave it 4.5. And you'll be hard-pressed for me to find a better, well, I will find a better match later on, but not by much. But if we were ranking just Garden matches, this might be the best Garden match we've watched so far, Kel.
Yeah, it is for me. I went 4.5 stars like you, Scott. That's the highest rating I've ever dropped on an MSG match. I thought about it actually long and hard. I compared it to the other 4-star matches and asked myself if it was better than those. And yeah, I've probably seen this match 3 or 4 times now, and it never gets old. And I really appreciated the atmosphere this time and the collection of talent. It really felt like a big deal. Great stage at MSG with all these guys, you know, the ovation for Savage was pretty good coming out. Like, he got a lot of cheers and it got bigger and bigger. And then, yeah, Piper got a godlike response. That felt really special because as far as anyone knew, this was going to be it for him at MSG, and Piper himself thought it would be too. So a lot of emotion in this match, major collection of all-star talent from the territories. From the early 80s here with JYD, Mid-South, Piper, Carolinas, Georgia, Portland, Steamboat, Carolinas, Savage, Memphis, and his own territory. Yeah, Race, of course, the NWA champion in the early 80s. Like, it was a monument to what Vince had collected over the years and put out here. And yeah, Hogan's not involved in it at all. And the crowd's nuclear hot. Huge JYD chants. Yeah, the brawling too on the outside. Piper uses a chair. This felt like a Japanese match from the time with the brawling outside and just nonstop action. This was really an atypical match for WWF. These are rare jewels, matches like these. And it's so great when they come up. This one, yeah, and it had all the history, all the interlocking feuds, everything going towards Mania 3 has been mentioned. Just so much to this. Mm-hmm. Just it was layer after layer. And then the action and work rate was great. Piper, like, you know, has been said, yeah, he left it all on the table. He went all out, building to the final climax between the two biggest stars in the match. Great. And a rare meeting between Piper and Savage at this time. And they actually wouldn't wrestle one-on-one too many times over the years. It was pretty rare. So it was cool. It came down to them. Of course, Savage was the IC champ still at this time. And then he loses cleanly, which was totally rare. Mm-hmm. So adds yet another layer to this match, something to make it even more special. The pop, of course, at the end was enormous. I loved how Piper lured Savage into going for the flying elbow and then moving. Yes. That was awesome. Just a perfect, almost perfect match.
Yeah, this match is like this. This match is like this that make this suffering these MSG.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I know. No kidding.
Wow, I'm rarely the low man on these grades. I was low all night. Jeff and I also watched this one for Jeff Learns Wrestling. It was a few episodes ago, pre-WrestleMania 3. So if you want to hear his thoughts on that, too, check it out. I know he was particularly enamored by the slick commentary. Tells you a lot, too, about the veteran status and not, like these guys not having big egos, that they,
yeah,
with the stature that they all are and the build for Mania, for them to all ensure that Piper was kind of the star of this match, like, speaks a lot about their character, too. You know what I mean? That they all kind of sat back and let him drive the match. And they all get the shine. They all look good. But you could tell Piper was kind of running the show, and they let him do it for his big last night. I thought that was shows a lot about what they are as veterans, that they kind of laid back and let him run things.
Yeah, totally. It was all about definitely. Respect. Yeah, it was a real special match.
Kelly, since you're not going to be here, this is kind of the last time you'll probably talk about Piper with us. You want to give any quick thoughts about this run of his? Or, I mean, you don't have to, but if there's anything you want to say about it.
Well, I mean, I love Piper, always have. This was when I first got into wrestling, and Piper was one of the guys that I totally loved right from the get-go, because, yeah, he came back as a babyface. I fell in love with him. I had a shirt, like an iron-on image shirt that you could get back in the 80s with Piper on it. That's how much I loved him. One of my favorite wrestlers. And, yeah, he went out on top at this time. Totally. Say what you will about his comeback in later years, but when he left, yeah, he left on top like few do. And yeah, what a star, what a final run. And this match just is totally one of his best matches ever. It's awesome. I can't say enough good things about him and about this match.
All right. So there you have it. February 1987, MSG, one of our final stops on the way to WrestleMania 3. Why don't we go through some awards, guys, and we'll talk about our upcoming schedule. So looking here, we'll start with, as always, our match of the night. And I think that's an easy layup here tonight, the six-man tag main event.
Yep.
That was
no doubt.
Okay. It's here, Steamboat. Whatever, I'll fill it in after, unless you wanted to, Scott, going through.
I'll do it.
All right, our Cousin Junior for our worst match of the night. I think another pretty layup candidate for us here this week. I'm going with Outback Jack versus Barrio.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Our Hogan Award, our MVP of the night. I feel like you have to give this to Roddy Piper, right? It's his night. He stole the show, and that six-man worked his ass off. The crowd was so into him. It was just a big night overall for him.
Yeah, that's who I
went with. I mean, I'm going to give an honorable mention to Slick, because he was just so great.
Oh, yeah, he was really good all night.
Mr. Monson. But,
yeah.
It's just silly. Like he's French Creole or something. But no, Piper owned the building tonight. Fucking owned it.
All right, let's try and make this a complete sweep as we move through this. Outback Jack for the Uncle Elmer Award. Worst worker yes, tonight.
Yeah. Outhouse, baby.
Of extremes.
best moment, I went with Piper's entrance and victory.
Yes. I would even extend that to the last. Yeah, I would even extend that to the last just like 4 minutes of him and Savage together, right. too. It was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
What do you have, Kelly?
Yeah, Piper pinning Savage, the end of the match. Yeah.
All right, can we do it? The Arcidi Award. I went with Butch Reed.
Yes, that's who I went.
Yeah, he was pretty buff. But really, there wasn't a lot of jacked up dudes tonight. Most of them were in Wisconsin.
That's true. Look at that.
Hercules was in the black hole of Pittsfield. So.
Is that our first clean? It may be one of our first clean. We may have maybe one other, but where we all agreed with no debate. So there you go. Yeah. Pretty across the board night. All right. Overall grades, gentlemen. A really good show. You know, some good matches. A lot of big things going on. A lot of WrestleMania 3 hype. However, there were some duds in there. Some stuff to slog through. I'm not going to say it's the best MSG show we've seen. I think it's one of the best. I went with a 5.5. I have a feeling you guys would be a little bit higher based on the grades being higher through each of our shows. But I haven't been too much higher than this that often. I've hit 6, 6.5 a couple times. But 5.5 is pretty high for me with these MSGs. What'd you have, Scott?
I mean, I've given the last two Saturday night's main events or high grades, 7, 7, and 6.5. I can't remember the highest house show. A lot of our house shows, I've had some 5.5s.
You gave a 6 in September.
Yeah. This show is better than any of those. Yeah, we had the Outback Jack dud, but it was
May looks like the last one we were all really high on. Like, you were a 6. I was a 6.5. Kelly was a 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give this. I'm probably going to give this.
Actually, July was pretty high.
Yeah, I'm going to give this I'm going to give this a 6.5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, the tag title and the six-man are two of the best matches you'll ever see in that building. And the other stuff, other than the Outback Jack debacle, the other stuff was not offensive because even the announcers were kind of acknowledging, we don't really give a shit what's going on. We're just pumping up this big show on March 29th. So, I mean, they even acknowledged it, so why am I going to fault it?
Mm-hmm.
So I think 6.5 is good. I mean, that main event, we're going to be hard-pressed, guys, from here on out to find an MSG house show match better than that. It's going to take a lot.
Yeah,
I know we're going to probably have – there might be a few sprinkled in 88, probably a couple in 89 that'll be really, really good. But this comes pretty closest to almost the perfect MSG match. Crowd, everything carries a lot of it. But the Hearts and the Bees was good. A couple of the things were good, too. And the duds were kind of swept under the rug because they dealt with the build to the big show. So 6.5 for me, Kel.
Yeah, I really liked the show. I watched it one sitting, and that's pretty rare. So that means it was a watchable show, and it was. I mean, the bad matches were not as offensive for whatever reason as some of the bad matches we've seen. They were kept short, and even the one with Palomo and Roma, I found a lot to like about that, or found it interesting, or whatever. And the main event, yeah, totally awesome. My highest rating ever was for, I believe, the year previous, February 86. I went 7 out of 10 on that show. That had Hogan and Savage in the blow-off to their series of lumberjack match, and also the Hearts and Bees previous encounter. So I'm going 7 out of 10 on this one, too. I felt it's about equal with that. I never felt like this was a slog to get through like a lot of the MSG shows are. And it topped it off with one of the best matches, of the decade in not just the Garden, but in WWF in general, I think.
All right, I'm going to go up to a 6. Okay, guys. I understand I was probably a little bit low on stuff. I'm going to blame it on the week of travel and watching this in a hotel room bed while I was exhausted. So I'm going to trust your judgment. I'm going to go to a 6. So it may make this one of the highest house shows we've had so far. So Great show. A lot of fun. It was good being back in the saddle here. We will be back Monday night, but it's going to be a very special episode. Will not be a review or a Vintage Vault. It's going to be our Halloween special. We're going to have some cool guests and a little bit different of a topic, something that we have never really done here before. So stay tuned for that. That'll be out Monday. 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be looking at the March 14th Saturday Night's Main Event, really the last kind of speed bump before Mania. We're going to have a week off baked in there, but November 20th, we're going to be back with a very special preview to WrestleMania 3. We'll have Mr. D'Amato will be with us, Kelly will be with us, Pete will be with us, the whole crew, breaking down the two big angles heading into Mania, Savage, Steamboat, Hogan, Andre. So, again, kind of different. We're going to look at some historical stuff, some direct feud building, really to give a full hype to WrestleMania 3, which will follow from there. So, again, those are kind of our next three shows. Thanks for kind of bearing with us during the week and a half off. Hope you enjoyed the break. I did. I think we all came back a little energized, so that's good. Be sure to check out everything else going on at PlaceMania.com. Of course, Jeff Learns Wrestling. We're back in the saddle there, too. We looked at WrestleMania 3 on that show, and we also looked at Floyd Mayweather versus The Big Show to kind of jump around a little bit. We live-watched that, Jeff and I, so check that out. Like the Facebook page as well, please, if you haven't yet. We made a dedicated one for that show where we kind of get share thoughts and updates for that, too. So if you haven't liked that page, please just look up Jeff Learns Wrestling on Facebook. Check it out. PlaceMania.com/Amazon. Shop with us for everything you got going on there. Scott, what do we got? Main event this week?
We do. Tomorrow night, we will actually be recording Main Event to give you a little preview. Chris Jordan will be joining us. We'll recap Sunday's TLC and look ahead to Survivor Series and some interesting booking discussions that we had on our chats today. I might incorporate that as well. And then you spoke about Mr. Schirmacher. He's going to join the Godfather and I as well. He, a couple weeks ago, went to our man Mr. Stutzy's, the CWF Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest.
Yep.
A couple weeks ago. So
and the CWF Rumble is airing tonight. It's blowing up Twitter, so be sure to check that out, too, and support our friends down there.
Yep. So he's going to be on tomorrow night. So we're going to have a full show that'll be up on PlaceMeNation.com tomorrow night.
There you go. Sounds like a very fun installment of Main Event. Kelly, WorldCast still rolling along?
Yeah. Speaking of Pete and Johnny and me, we do WorldCast every week, looking at world-class wrestling right from the beginning, at least what they have on the network, so 1982. We've seen some pretty bad wrestling, comparable to the worst of the worst from the MSG shows, but still a lot of fun stuff, and it's a quick, breezy show, and just a bunch of laughs, really. So check that out. I did Mount Olympus a few weeks back with Landy on the unreleased DVD from WWE, a part one. Trying to fit in a part two, it's been tough for me the last few weeks, scheduling-wise, but we'll figure it out and get that done, looking basically at the new generation era.
That's big, man. You got Richard Land on the show. That's he's an icon there.
Huge.
Yeah, he is. I mean, the guy knows his shit. I mean, if if he went on Brainbuster back in the day, he would have done very well, I think.
Without cheating.
Without cheating.
Yeah, without using a computer. The man is a human computer of WWF knowledge.
No, it's a really good episode of Mount Olympus. Check it out. Breaking down the first... it's not really... Right, you kind of... You did it in an interesting way. Let's put it that way. Just check out the show. It's really good. And I mentioned it before, but every Monday I'm doing a written piece on the history of ECW on the network. So I started in whatever their first episode is. I think it's the first one on Philadelphia Sports Channel. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm learning a lot and really enjoying Stevie Wonderful. But also the one I just watched today is a couple weeks out. It had the debut of Paul Lee. So a lot of good stuff going on. Check that out every Monday. It's a quick read. I try and make it brief. A lot of lists and not much writing, just kind of bullet points and lists. So check that out. And if you want companion pieces to WorldCast, the old network adventure with myself, Scott, Greeny, Brian Bayless, Chad, In and Out. We had a bunch of guys in and out of that thing. Check that out, too, because we did a bunch of the world-class run, I think mainly late 82 into 83. So check that out as well for some companion pieces. That's it. I'll be back Monday night with our Halloween special. And until then, everyone enjoy. Of course, it's Halloween music season, so enjoy that, too, as we head out. For Kelly and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. Talk to you Monday night. Take care.
I'm looking forward to Kelly inviting me on the great exploits of Boogaloo Shaft.
We saw Elm Street, and man, it was death. And everything seemed all right when we left. But when I got home and laid down to sleep, that began the nightmare. But on my street...
my room like an oven. My bed soaked with sweat, and man, I was bugging. I checked the clock, it had stopped at 12:30. It had melted, it was so darn hot, and I was thirsty. I went downstairs to grab some juice over a coat, flipped the TV off, and then I almost choked when I heard this awful voice coming from behind. It said, man, I ain't even wait to see who it was. Broke outside in my drawers and screamed so long, cuz got halfway up the block, I calmed down and stopped screaming. Then thought, oh, I get it, I must be dreaming. I strolled back home with a grin on my grill. I figured since this is a dream, I might as well get ill. I walked in the house, the big bad fresh prince, but Freddy killed all that noise real quick. He grabbed me by my neck and said,
here's what we'll do. We got a lot of work here, me and you. The souls of your friends, you and I will claim. You got the body and I got the brain.
I said, yo, Fred, I think you got me all wrong. I ain't partners with nobody with nails that long. Look, I'll be honest, man, this team won't work. The girls won't be on you, Fred, your face is all burned. I pat him on the shoulder, said, thanks for stopping by. Then I opened up the door and said, take care, guy. He got mad, drew back his arm and slashed my shirt. I laughed at first and thought, hold up, that hurt. It wasn't a dream, man, this guy was for real. I said, Freddy, how's been an awful mistake here. No further words, and then I darted upstairs. Crashed through my door, then jumped on my bed. Pulled the covers up over my head. Said, oh, please do something with Fred. He jumped on my bed, but threw the covers with his claws. Tried to get me, but my alarm went off, and then silence. It was a whole new day, I thought. I wasn't scared of him anyway, until I noticed those rips in my sheets, and that was proof that there had been a nightmare on my street. Come on, Jeff, answer it! Come on, man.
Hello?
Jeff, it's Prince, man. Jeff, wake up! Jeff, wake up!
What do you want?
Jeff, wake up, man. Listen to me, Jeff.
It's 3 o'clock.
Jeff,
in the
morning. Jeff, would you listen to me? Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Man.
Jeff, listen to me. Don't go to sleep, Jeff. Jeff, Jeff! 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 Jeff!